Thank you very much, Jay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and honorable members in particular. I'm Susan Jugelana, Chair of the Portfolio Committee for Energy, WF.
Thank you, Chair. Andrea Singer, Senior General Manager for Integrated Demand Management from Eskom. I think on the agenda this morning, Sonu Wolfing Singh and heat pumps would be in my area.
Thank you. I had the benefit of Andrew battling with the technology, so I copied the solution. My name is Sandile Makhumosi. I am the head of electricity in eThekwini, and I work with SALGA on electricity issues.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Mthobe Kholisa. I am the Executive Director for Municipal Infrastructure Services, Environment and Climate Change in SALGA.
Good morning, Chair members. My name is Professor Chou. I'm part of the ESCOM delegation. May I ask you to, on behalf of the Chairman and the Chief Executive Officer, submit their apology? They have submitted a written apology, and I think they even called the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. This meeting last week, and long ago, the meeting with Mr. Sadako and Mr. Sadako, who really wanted to be part of the delegation. So I'm leaving the delegation on that. Yeah.
Good morning, Chair and the member. My name is Louis Maleka. I'm the acting director executive of distribution business in the ESCOM.
I'm Isaac Sokoko, corporate specialist, electrification and regulation in the ESCOM.
Morning, Chair. I'm Karen Davinia, parliamentary affairs manager based in Cape Town for ESCOM.
I'm Akam Lotto, a member of parliament and a member of the energy committee.
Hilary Jossi, I'm the ESCOM spokesperson. It's the spokesperson for ESCOM, my name is Hilary Jossi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Nkululeko Hadebe, the member of the Portfolio Committee on Energy.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honourable members. I'm Elza Finningen from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honourable members. I'm John Gunda from the Northern Cape and a member of the Select Committee of Economic Development.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Lerato Modisana from ESCOM Parliamentary Affairs.
Good morning, my name is Byrne. I'm from the Parliamentary Management Monitoring Group.
Morning, my name is Temba Kubula from Parliamentary Communication Services.
Kalana Hari from SALGA, the Parliamentary Office.
Morning, Blas Masham, Parliamentary Research.
Good morning, I'm the class member of Portfolio Committee. Apologies for being a bit late.
Thank you, I'm sorry for coming. My name is Nongula Matide, member of the Energy Committee.
Hello, Marina. Hey, listen, are you going to get two apologies later on, or can I make them so long? Honourable Bev Abrams, apologise, you've got illness in the family. And then Honourable Member Susan Power has just landed. His flight has been delayed, so he can come as soon as he can. Thank you.
Also, the following apologies to Honourable Gambi. Sickness, Honourable Bikali. Oh yeah, she's in Rwanda, and and Honorable Sinclair. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take the people who are left. Are you sitting in the close to a mic? Oh, you sort it out. Okay. I'm just worried that that's a quite a key partner. I'm not sorted. Honorable members, we will have the start of the presentation. Then afterwards, I'll hand over to to Honorable Member Zigalana to deal with the ESCOM presentation, and after that, we'll take questions from the members. Is that in order, Honorable Member? And we'll take the two presentations, and then we'll take the questions. I mean, your memory span can last long, Honorable Kalingan and Honorable Ross. I mean, not a problem. Okay. Salga, you ready? I think we've just been joined by another member or two. If they can just introduce themselves. All those that have walked in now, just introduce yourselves, please. You know, the reason why I'm doing this, because I don't want to read in the newspaper tomorrow a reliable and an informed source that the media says that. I need to put a name to say, no. That one has said that. You understand? So when I respond, I can say, no. Vigalana, you said that. Adam, you said that. Not a reliable or an informed stock. So, and also, we need to know who's in the room. You know, you can't get to a person's house and doesn't know who's there. Wow.
Joe Chalau, member of the Energy Committee, Portfolio Committee. My apology for coming late.
I'm not sharing from the Independent Democrats. This is apologies for being late, but you have to show me leniency because it is my birthday.
Okay, you know, we've got a rule in the select committee. I don't know if it works in the portfolio committee, but if it's your birthday, you either for the choice, you can either provide the tea or lunchtime, the lunch and the drink, or this afternoon you can the dinner and the drink. So it's your choice.
I'm in the national service.
Thank you. It's a joint committee, so you can't escape that. But happy birthday, Honorable Khrailan, and may there be many more bestowed upon you. And I hope the next birthday you'll be in the benches of the African National Congress. Salga.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio and Select Committee. And members of the committee. We wanted to start with this presentation, just an overview of how the INEP program has been performing over the years. I think from the slide that we have on the screen, in which in the last 5 years, the program, using information that we got from the Department of Energy, is indicated to have achieved in the last 5 years, 80% of what was set as a target in terms of connection. One thing that is noticeable is that the program has always been behind schedule. You know, you find that in 2010, there are cases in which we are still dealing with projects that were set for 2007. So then you find that the more the years go by, for each planned connection, that's where you then begin to see the improvement. So there's always a catch up. That's the point, I think, that for us is here on that slide. Then looking at the current year, again, we look at how the program is performing there. There are quite a number of areas from where we stand as well, that as you see are beginning to be indicators where we should be. Focusing on where construction has not started at this time of the year in terms of local government financial year, that almost in 7 of the provinces they are red lines. Clearly, which would lead us to bring 8% of the project not having started by now. Those are to complete within about 40%. It means that we do need to do something in respect of those. But then to understand why are we here, why do we always catch up, and why are we lagging behind in terms of implementation even this year? We thought let's not divide this into three categories, rural, urban, and informal settlements, and explore issues in each of those so that we can understand what are the issues and how, as Salga, we are proposing that these issues should be dealt with. Because we can't just come to Parliament and say this is the problem, we should start thinking about how to solve this. So if we start about, at the level of rural INEP, some key things that maybe are worth noting is that rural constitutes so far about 75% of the remaining settlements. In this area, ESCOM is largely the distributor because it inherited from a homeland. I don't think it's their creation that we have to stand up, but that's where the biggest challenge has always been in terms of access to electricity. In this case, municipalities, both licensed and unlicensed municipalities, tend to access money from the Department of Energy, in some cases from provincial government, to implement projects in this area of ESCOM supply. We also, in this area, do witness high cost per connection, as the remaining areas are much more challenging than the ones that have already been connected. Topography and all other things come into factor. The sparseness of the settlement, meaning that the connection to the household becomes much more higher. The approach is that now business parties that access this money, they implement a project and then hand over the infrastructure to ESCOM for operation and maintenance or completion of the project. Now, in that context, there are some areas that I think for us are an area of concern. One is that the non-distributing municipalities do not have electricity departments by their design, so it's not their function. Now, for them to implement this project in which they access money from provinces and from the departments, they completely rely on consultants because they don't have institutional capacity sitting in house by design. But then also, in terms of the distributing municipalities, we also generally have serious strategies there, where about 50% of the established schools, only about 50% of the established schools are actually built. And within those municipalities, as you see, the challenge is about 75% rural. Councils and communities in those rural areas say we want services now. And therefore, those municipalities have to stretch themselves as well beyond their licensed area into these rural areas with this limited capacity. Now, what then tends to happen is that municipalities have now become sitting ducks for services and consultants, if I may use that word, hopefully with the protection of Parliament, which apparently they approach municipalities to be appointed for designing and managing implementation of projects. They would say the design cost would be at risk and would be paid once the project that the municipality will submit will have been approved. That's what they would say. But in reality, there's no risk because what they do, they sit with the municipality and say, this is the design, the municipal manager signed this, it's a convincing design and we take and submit to INEP or whichever funder, and then the funder will say, we approve the project. And once it has been approved, then they say, oh, that's their design cost, and they are also appointed to continue to manage the implementation of the project. So there's no real risk in that sense. Now, this happens in a situation where desperate municipal managers are trying to find the best available support, if I can call it support, to respond to the pressure to deliver services and connect households in the rural area. Now, in that context, we have a municipal manager and a consultant, which is interested in just getting business. You do not have capacity to review the appropriateness of the proposal technically from the side of the municipality. And there's also no capacity to actually evaluate the quality of the work that has been done, supervised by this consultant that has designed this and facilitated the whole process. but at the same time also the INEP offices in the region do not have capacity to provide this kind of support. So there's no one who stands on the side of the government in essence at the local level to say all of the things that we're getting from the private sector is good or better. That's an area that I think is an area of concern. We will come back to it in terms of how do we think it can be solved. In terms of the urban, we think it contributes, the urban INEP or backlog contributes a fraction of the remaining 25%. A big part of the 25% is informal settlement, but a fraction of it is urban. These are the areas where the licensed municipalities are. What we have had as a challenge here is that the department was not allowing, or so far is not allowing, the upgrade of infrastructure that would then be required in order to do this kind of electrification, because there's already infrastructure, but then if you want to connect additional consumers, you have to upgrade this, but this is not financed by the department mechanism of financing. We have had, we're hoping now to have a situation. We have had a situation also where the department is in the lack of funds in field connections, which is essentially the kind of connections now that we have in urban spaces. And I think, in my view, this again is contrary to the objective of the certification of urban development. But what we've been saying from the point of view of responding to climate change, from the point of view of improving efficiency of urban spaces, is that we need to move more towards the innovation. And if you have to do that, you have to put the infrastructure that can do that. So it's an issue that, again, we come back to in terms of how do we think it can be solved. In some of the cases, some of the issues that are arising in terms of urban INF is the requirement for 80% of the spaces of housing development. What this means is that when Department of Human Settlements working with provinces are building human settlements and houses, the requirement is that firstly, people must occupy these houses, about 80% of them must be occupied before they can be connected to it. Now this puts us in a difficult situation in municipalities because communities are saying we will not occupy houses that have not been completed. So, because from their point of view, a complete house must have electricity. But then the requirement is that for it to have electricity, they must occupy. So trying to explain this to communities tends to be a challenge for us, but we will come back to in terms of how we think it can be solved. Then from the informal settlement point of view, this is where the remaining 25%, a significant part of the 25% is of the backlog. Here what we're seeing is that the numbers of informal settlements are increasing. And now focus has been shifting to say we need to regularize informal settlements, we need electrification of informal settlements. In fact, the national target is set out in the outcomes, in the sort of outcomes of government, is that by 2014, 400,000 informal settlements must have been upgraded, which includes that they must be electrified. Now, what this says to us as local government is that informal settlement upgrading and electrification then becomes a priority program that we should be focusing on in addition to rural. So while we have 25%, it means something that we must quickly fix by 2014, but again continue with rural connections as well. Now, what has been happening is that apart from providing the required electrical population, each informal trading is also provided with a prepaid meter currently. And basic connection fees. Now, what we think becomes an issue here is that there is a need to ensure planning alignment between informal settlement upgrading program as well as electricity regulation of the terms of energy if we are to achieve the targets that we took us to achieve. We will propose at the end how do we think practically this alignment could be achieved. But in part, we do think that the multi-year program, the multi-year housing development plan of the provincial department must be made available to the Department of Energy so that the plan for electrification can talk to this program. Well, of course, we're trying to find now a severe problem that one department comes with its own plan that are not aligned with the other, and the municipality to try and make this work together, and they don't always work together, leading to the problem that we find in communities where they feel that they are not getting the services that they are requiring. We also do think that with the former settlement upgrading, sometimes there is a need to temporarily connect an informal settlement. And as it has been upgraded, then the next part of it is to again remove that connection and put it into the new upgraded upgraded structure. Then it means that it might be necessary for the National Housing Program to be adjusted to include funding for removal of the existing meters and reinstallation in the new building. If we were to continue with informal work, the formalization of informal settlements assumes that you are developing them over time, you are getting them better over time. It's got the implications of double costing the connections, because then you connect first to the informal, upgrade it, and connect again to the upgraded one. As of now, there isn't a funding arrangement that allows for that. So the general issues, though, that we'd like to raise, and that are not necessarily about rural formal or informal, are the following. One is the issue of EPW funding. Here, the policy of the department is that they would fund the full cost of connection of electrification in the case of ESCOM. That's the point. But in the case of municipalities are required to top up. They'll be given a funding with a connection. But if the cost of connection to that particular consumer is higher than what is provided for, it's the municipality that must suffer, which means that it must raise this money from the inhabitants of the municipal area in order to subsidize that particular connection. Now, we do have a challenge in the sense that the costs are becoming higher, and therefore the ability of the municipality to be able to top up is increasingly becoming important. With that, I think we need to link it with the whole problem of municipalities that have severe cash problems, especially in rural areas where there is no income base, which means then that without that top up funding, then we have problems. Then the other issue that is within the generic issue that might need to be addressed is the issue of alignment between the budgeting process. Essentially, just to make this point here, municipalities get to know by February what is going to be going to be allocated to them. But by that time, budgets of municipalities are almost done. The budgeting process starts in November in municipalities. So when announcement is made as part of DORA in March, already by that time, councils are already approving budget. And therefore, then it means that there would be delays in trying to integrate this newly found money into municipal budgeting process. And to make things worse, then, is that the money then gets only released in July. So I think here, in order to facilitate fast implementation, to find ways of aligning between particular processes of national and municipality. The third point is bulk infrastructure, which is a problem across sectors. In water, it is a problem. In storage, it is a problem. The issue of bulk infrastructure. And also complicating the issue of bulk infrastructure in some cases is a misalignment between ESCOM infrastructure development plan or ESCOM infrastructure and municipal development plan, where a municipal development plan would want to develop a municipal area, let's say going to the east, but the existing infrastructure is much more integrated on the west. And therefore, from the point of view of ESCOM, I suppose, naturally, that if you were to start in the west, it would be easier to start in the west. But the council would have decided that our development strategy says we need to focus on the east, and therefore we have that. But over and above that is the general problem of funding of park infrastructure that the Department of Cooperative Government is grappling with, to say how do we deal with this? Because become overall a constraint to development in the country. Then the last point on that general that we would like to raise is the issue of procurement processes. I think as a country, we have tried so hard because of experiences of corruption, I suppose. We have tried so hard to ensure accountability in procurement, in government in general, and in particular in municipalities, and in particular. But then the negative consequence of that has been the resultant delay or the compromise of functionality in terms of procurement, where in some cases we find that it takes about 8 months to conclude a procurement, leading to long delays in procurement and high costs associated with those delays. I'm raising this. I'm not sure if it is possible for the community to deal with this, but I think it's something that leadership of the country must think about to say, how do we, in the context of ensuring accountability, also maintain some level of good functionality in the way that we procure services at the local level, so we can pass infrastructure services across the board, not only on the level. So some of the recommendations that we'd like to make, and we want to take these recommendations under the area of INF, we want to take this recommendation further within the advisory committee of the minister. The first one is that we think that there is a need for some kind of shared capacity to provide technical support to undercapacitated municipalities. And we think this can be achieved by capacitating INF regional offices to play this role, that where you have a municipality that is either not a distributor or a distributor without the necessary technical skills, you have somebody who is a shared resource in the INF regional office who will actually play that role, give the advice of then modify the municipal manager to say, even if you have this recommendation or this proposal from the consultant, somebody else who stands on the side of government must look at it and say, does it make sense? And when the work has been done before paying the contractor, somebody who stands on the side of government must look and say, is this what we approve that it should be done? Because in the case, for example, I think Honorable Chair mentioned the experience of KSD. I was in KSD recently when we were talking about this, where the new engineer who just joined KSD was shocked to find the kind of work that was done there by consultants and contractors who were working on their own without supervision from the side of government. So we think that would solve the problem to an extent. The second one, we talked about coordination of planning alignment. We think that if we capacitate regional offices of INF, this could be the second role that INF could do, being the center of coordination. Whenever there is an approval of a project, we must know that there is infrastructure for ESCOM to support this project. So we don't find a situation where you develop and electrify a settlement only to find that there isn't energy that can connect to that. So we are suggesting that maybe let's make the INF regional office much more effective centers of coordination between what is approved to be done by the various role players, but there is better coordination. We have made this other recommendation already of provincial housing departments to make available their housing development plans to the Department of Energy and in particular to INF, so that there is better alignment to facilitate that, which is what I've just talked about. Also, we would be making the recommendation, we'd like to make this recommendation, that DOE allows the upgrade of investment system infrastructure when it is required, particularly for the urban areas, to electrify the infill and to fund the infill themselves. And we think that this requirement of 80% occupancy must really be reviewed. According to us, it must be done away with. The development of a human settlement must not be first do this before I do this. It must be an integrated development, because otherwise we find situations where communities say we are delivering substandard settlement for us. The last three that we'd like to make is the adjustment of the National Housing Program to include funding for the removal of existing meters and reinstallation in the new dwellings. And also the department to provide full cost of connection in areas provided for by both ESCOM and municipalities. So we do need to review the allocation, the connection, especially now that the costs are going up. The last one that we think would work better, once we have all of these things place in our view is that Eskom, which is a distributor in municipal spaces, should enter into service delivery agreements with municipalities who it will be managing infrastructure that they are developing. That municipalities, as and when they are developing infrastructure to hand over to Eskom, they do that in a context of an agreement of the standards of design, and in municipality Eskom, when they take over, they also are performing in terms of operating and maintenance of infrastructure according to the aspirations of the municipality. Because we do find a lot of misalignment of expectations between Eskom and municipality, and we think that having an agreement about what we can do from both sides would be important from this point of view. So, Chair, those are some of the things that we thought we would raise in respect of INEC. The second part of the presentation deals with solar water testing. I don't know whether you want to zoom on to that one as well. Thank you. With regards to the solar water heating, currently what is standing as a government target is that by 2014 we need to have installed 1 million solar water heaters. And this is supposed to be done through three different interventions: government departments in their own buildings and so on, municipalities in energy, and thirdly, individual and business initiatives incentivized by the state system to us. From the figures that we got from the Department of Energy, we learned that so far, and I think this is the same figure that was quoted by the minister in her budget speech, so far that 115,000 systems have been delivered so far since the beginning of the program in 2009. We are trying to get to 1 million by 2014. Our view as SALGA is that we do need significant improvement, both in terms of funding and institutional arrangements, if we are to get to 1 million by 2014. At the rate we're going, it does not really inspire confidence from our side. But just quickly scanning this to get where are the contributions, what has been done where. I would say there are two main interventions. There's one which is what I can call the fiscal funding scheme. There, the target, even though we are essentially targeting to contribute significantly towards 1 million. This one, when you look at what was budgeted for in the last financial year and what has been budgeted in this current financial year, we find that it's just about 50 solar water heaters that really have been budgeted for in terms of the development. So far, we have managed to achieve only 18,000. Lastly, the delivery mechanism is that these are in-kind contribution, what you can call shaky service contribution, through Eskom into this municipal area, with the exception of where the department is looking at a direct transfer or a shaky conditional grant to the municipality to do this. In the case of these ones, these 6,000 or the 18,000 for this year, we have not managed to get information on progress in respect of this. Some that has been put on the budget by the department, but there hasn't been reports of any work that has been done. So much of the work that has been done relates to what was budgeted in the past financial year. Our issue is that this, in our view, is almost insignificant in case. I mean, 50,000 targeting 1 million is a long way to go. And again, our observation, we don't know if the department intended it to be like this, but I think it makes sense. So our observation is that this intervention is aimed at improving the quality of life of poor households. It is not about reducing existing demand. So it's about getting poor households to have access to warm water, basically, not taking off a giver from the grid, because these are households that otherwise would not have had a giver. The one that, in our view, is about reducing demand from the grid is the one that incentivizes the rebate system. From the numbers that we have from the department, I mean the 18,000, I mean the 150 minus 18,000, it does suggest that this particular rebate scheme has so far delivered since 2009 just less than 100,000 givers. And in our view, this is a lost opportunity to reduce existing demand from the grid, particularly at the time where we were experiencing as a country tight supply conditions. Clearly, there's something that can be done here. In our view, we think that delegating this project to one institution, in this case, has been delegated to ESCOM to manage the rebate system. And in our view, also ESCOM's implementation mechanism that does not take advantage of the potential contributions that can be made by municipalities may have been part of the problem. So what we think we need to do here is to look at how can we leverage the potential contribution that can be made by municipalities to enhance this particular program, which currently is run by way of households and businesses on initiatives without really a push from the side of the municipality. We do think that one area that really we thought we sometimes could exploit is the insurance company. I'm sure members of the committee would know that give us that almost on a daily basis. And what we find is that insurance companies, they replace these givers with the same givers instead of solar water givers. And we think that it's something that could really be arranged that you put some of the rebates to these insurances so that when they replace, they cover the cost difference from the rebate and replace with the solar water givers, as opposed to what we still finding that they are doing. In our view, give a heat pump, we don't think they are as vigorously tested or promoted as they should be. Everyone who talk about what a solar water heating so far tends to think more about a solar water heater as opposed to a heat pump. We think that we should be pursuing this with a bit more vigor. So the recommendation that we would have in this regard is that we think there's a need to devise an implementation strategy that takes advantage of the benefit of numbers and ability to access communities that may be leveraged by working with municipalities. For both the fiscal funding scheme, the one of the five municipalities so far, and as well as the rebate scheme, we think that we do need to involve municipalities a little bit more there. The second recommendation that we want to make is that the government must discuss with the insurance companies possible use of the rebate to top up the insurance bill of the new diesel to cover the price difference, so that at the end we can see solar water diesel being used as a replacement whenever the insurance is replacing the price at best diesel. We think we do need more vigorous effort to improve uptake of diesel heat pumps than we are currently doing. So all of these recommendations that we are making here, we are hoping to persuade government to take up this using the National Electrification Advisory Committee, which is a national strategy in which local government is participating. So that if this can be taken up, we are hoping that we could just see the difference both in terms of the electrification program and as well as the solar water heating program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kulita. Is there anyone that wants to add on to comment? How can I want to add on to presentation? No one. Sir, Jigalana, member.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now it's ESCOM 10. Whilst we're just getting the ESCOM to be settled, can you just check who from the Department of Energy is here? Only two. From such a big department. Oh, three. Oh, thank you. Welcome. I suppose one of the things, please introduce yourself. Continue. Oh, you're ready? Okay, we'll do that later.
Good morning, Chair and members of the Select Committee. We would really like to appreciate the opportunity given to us to come and share with you the journey we have undertook since 1990 in terms of electrification of our country. By and large, the issues raised by SALGA are common to us, and we are jointly have to actually look at them and address some of the negative issues that were raised, particularly with the policy issues. So I'm not going to repeat some of them. And also that I must apologize that the slide that you're going to have here has more details in terms of explaining the acronyms and so forth. We realized later that we used a lot of technical language and we changed that. Our presentation is two parts. I will present the electrification program, and my colleague and Etinga will deal with the solar and demand side issues, which I think will align with the SALGA issues that were raised by SALGA. Chair, our journey started in 1990. Just to give a brief background, that the ECOM electrification program was initiated under the banner called Electricity for All, realizing that there's a whole lot of our communities that are still using candles and paraffin. And the program was mainly funded by ESCOM from that period until 2001, when government decided that they will actually take over the planning as well as the funding. And a mechanism was put in place to address the issues under the white paper, which was established in December 1998. And that was integrated into the INF plan. From that point on, 2001, ESCOM decided that they will continue with the program, but the focus mainly of the INF program was to deal with the backlog, particularly from your takeover areas of the then CBDC areas and some of the old townships, the BLAs. And the program also focused mainly on infrastructure. I think you will realize as we proceed that the cost of the connection changed at some period within our program, and this is due to infrastructure. When we started in 1990, the focus was mainly in the urban environment. And as the program started to grow into the outliners towards the rural areas, we started to have to build, or we have to consider building infrastructure. Our program currently is informed by IDPs, which we participate actively with the municipalities. We also participate in their economic development programs, and it is true that there are times when there's misalignment of existing infrastructure as regards to their desire to grow. But we are working together in most of the municipalities to address that gap. The 2006-2007, this is just to illustrate that the cost milestone started in 2006-2007. Initially it was 893 million. Now we are sitting at 1.7 billion. And then you will see as we go on that that amount is not consummating to the numbers that we will reflect in terms of connections. So we are getting average 100,000 connections per annum for that period of 6 years. This slide speaks to the history. As you can see, from 1994, the dark blue part is the progress. Starting 1994, we were delivering almost 250,000 to 300,000 connections per annum, which at that time government gave us a target of 1.7 million, and which we exceeded if you look at the journey. In 2001, you will realize that if you look at the cost started dropping, because we're mainly focusing in the areas where infrastructure was readily available. We needed just to upgrade it in some instances, but in some instances we were just to connect.
Then 2001, the numbers fluctuated from 200 to 150 drop, and the cost increased. And that's what I'm trying to explain, that the infrastructure challenges, particularly when we now focus on deep rural areas where we have no grid or non-grid environment, is becoming more and more a challenge. However, we are determined to move into those areas, and I think as Sarda has explained, funding remains a big concern for all of us. We also, within the program with the department, we're giving targets to electrify schools since 1991. To date, we have electrified 11,000 schools as well as clinics. And this is broken into provinces, as you can see, and we still have a backlog, but it's very minimal. We are now busy with the Department of Education to try and finish the backlog on schools, as well as the Department of Health to finish the backlog on clinics. Fortunately, the new clinics and the new schools come with a package of electrification. Just to illustrate the significant backlog nationally, that we have two sections. One is proclaimed areas, which means the areas that are proclaimed to be residential and can be habitable. And we also have a portion which is unproclaimed, which is our biggest challenge. And two issues around that one is safety of our communities, particularly the vulnerable, the kids, public incidents, and so forth. And our challenge in these areas is that whenever you raise the issue with the communities, the issues are very clear, that they want electricity. And I think that's the dilemma that they are sitting with, that the paradox is we want electricity on the other hand, the unsafe acts are creating environment for fatalities. Now, on my right, you will see that percentage-wise, the biggest areas that really need a lot of penetration and attention in terms of the backlog is KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape, being the highest unelectrified, particularly the rural areas. And already you can see with the mountains, the terrain, the non-grid system, and it's posing a major challenge which will put a lot of burden on funding. By and large, this is the picture we have in terms of backlog. And if we were to reach the 2014 universal access, we need to accelerate this backlog, and that will mean more injection, capital injection for infrastructure, as well as cost per connection. And this is the area that we probably will need help and assistance. Under the unproclaimed, just to again echo the sentiment around electrification of this area, somehow one would seek to see a policy change on how we deal with areas that are unproclaimed, particularly uncontrolled urbanization. I think it's more people moving over that putting a burden on the system. Because the current infrastructure, for instance, if you have one household, the current policy says in most municipalities is one connection per household. And in the yard, you will find one to three or four bedyards which are taking on the same networks and systems. And that will automatically put a challenge on the system, overloading the system. And during winter, like now, we are experiencing a lot of intermittent outages because of the system is overburdened. And it doesn't matter whether you put a bigger circuit breaker, it will continue to trip because there's more people that were not planned for that are connected. Now, if there's a policy change that we, particularly in the urban areas where you have multiple points, we can be able to connect more, then we can be able to upgrade the system. Again, it's going to put some cost, but at least the pain of having electricity cut off during winter and all the unintended consequences of violence and protest will be managed from that end. In terms of our program, we are clearly conscious of our commitment to economic development. If you look at the figures previous year, we have spent almost 1.2 billion rand on DOBWs and triple BEs. It is a deliberate effort. We have developed a lot of contractors per province. We are of the opinion that we are actually overcapacitated
when it comes to construction contractors, except in the areas of transmission and sub-transmission networks where you build substations. But where you do connections as well as lines and so forth, we believe that we have enough hands that can do that, and we have contributed by and large to the economy in terms of our commitment to empower previously disadvantaged. So we are continuing to do this, and these are the province broken down, the numbers are broken down per province. It might not be in the press, and my apologies for that. Chair, our focus now is that since that the EDI holdings and rest have been taken off the table in terms of resolving the industry problems, we have consciously decided that we would like to actively partner with our colleagues in the municipalities to look at some of the critical issues that they are facing, particularly the technical skills development. In our environment, we have established a lot of colleges, technical training colleges, which are, some of them are run in-house, some of them are those that we develop with some suppliers. We believe that through this system, we can actually start assisting municipalities where we have a footprint. The pricing and tariff structures, I think these are some of the issues that result to problems within debt management and so forth, and the adjustments which municipalities have to do when the tariff increase is granted by NERSA to ESCOM when we implement. We have challenges with energy losses management. I think from ESCOM side, we have initiated a lot of programs to cap this schedule of this action, but we believe that partnering with the municipalities, that will help. And a case in point, Distrilot in Soweto, Distrilot in Gauteng province, had problems over the weekend, and we met with the councillors, we met with all the relevant parties as well as the community to look at how best do we provide a better service. And we had reached some fundamental divisions that we will work together and we'll make sure that we remove all these illegal connections, we upgrade the network, but also communities will have to start paying for their services. We've got contact centers throughout the country, 7 of them, which we believe that we have increased their capacity in terms of assisting municipalities where they still have challenges with contact centers and in terms of access of their customers to to their networks as well as services. We are also saying we can assist in planning, particularly with master planning, long-term planning. We have a 10-year program in terms of how we want to develop our infrastructure, the asset block, particularly for economic development. If you look at the areas where the municipalities are expanding, and we are also present, we've got different programs to assist in terms of planning and having master plans for over 20 years. Those plans are available, but we are saying we can assist where we are required by our colleagues from the municipalities to develop this plan. Maintenance and operations is a big issue in terms of maintaining the networks, aging networks. If we look at the infrastructure in general, countrywide, the electricity infrastructure, particularly the distribution infrastructure, is ailing and aging, and it requires a lot of attention from skill development as well as proper maintenance and operations. We have developed systems that we believe that if we all work together, we can actually leverage on the investment. Demand side management, my colleague will take more time on that. The technical standards, we have developed some technical standards to help us in terms of what type of network or new network for new demands moving forward you require to build the country to sustain the economic development and sustain all other developments. Credit management, we believe that some of the challenges municipalities are facing is the ability to collect revenue. And we are of the opinion that this can be sorted out. We've got cases in case like in the Weekend area where Malakene had challenges, and they requested us to come and look at how they conduct their trade management. We went in, we were together with them and GDSA. We managed to come up with a lot of solutions, and they are now busy collecting. So there are solutions to the industry. We are of the opinion that the industry requires a coherent approach to all the challenges, from technical challenges, credit and revenue management challenges, losses challenges,
GSM challenges as well as infrastructure development challenges. Chair, I will pause here, and if it pleases the House, I will hand over to my colleague, Andrew Hadinga.
Chairman, members of the committee, my apologies for the delay in switching over to the presentation. Would that be PowerPoint sharing? Chair, if I can agree with my colleague Louis with regards to the summing up of SALGA. I totally agree, and I think very insightful comments made with regards to the solar water heating program in the country. And from our side, certainly, we would welcome a closer working relationship with SALGA to address these matters. And before starting the presentation, if I could pick up on specific points raised by SALGA, firstly in terms of the fact that solar water heating is about service delivery rather than demand savings in the grid. Once again, we would wholeheartedly agree to that, but to that we would add that it's about job creation as well. We estimate over the last year that we have seen 2,000 jobs created through the solar water heating industry, which has been largely accelerated over this particular period. Second, in terms of the insurance payouts, I think a very good suggestion. We have met with the insurance industry at a high-level meeting last week to discuss this matter, and certainly we have support from the industry that they would be looking to make a payout for a first diesel available to the installation of a solar water heater. So I think that is a very promising development, and this will be going forward to the board of the relevant authority within the insurance industry for agreement. Heat pumps, yes, we certainly have a rebate program available now for heat pumps, and we will accelerate our heat pump program as we're doing the solar water heating, as I will explain in the presentation. The way back on, I think it has been covered that by 2014, the government's target of 1 million solar water heaters must be achieved. The Eskom view is that this target will be comfortably achieved, subject to the necessary funding being made available. The benefits of the program are significant, driven by job creation through installation, maintenance, and auditing of systems. The skills acquisition is phenomenal. A lot of training is happening at the moment. Service delivery has been addressed by my learned colleague from SALGA. The shift to a green society and economy is vital. Solar water heating is a very visible demonstration of a change in society. Before the start of this meeting, through the windows, members were commenting that they hadn't actually seen the view through this. But if you were to look, the building across the way has got solar water heaters now on the street. Change is happening through society. And then, of course, electricity savings, although not that big, still it does make a difference to the grid. Solar water heating does form part of Eskom's demand side management program, which is funded through the MYPD process, basically through tariff increases. We apply to NERSA for funding for particular physical activities, which includes smart site management, and within that includes water heating. The funding which has been allocated over the period of the multi-year price determination period, which is a three-year period which started last year, as well as the year before that, has been indicated in the slide. Over the three-year period, Eskom has been allocated 1.1 billion rand for solar water heating by NERSA. The rebate which we pay does vary from time to time, and the slide before you shows the graph of the average rebate which has been paid. We doubled the size of the rebate a year ago in order to stimulate the market. We totally agree with Salga that we needed to expedite this program, so we did take bold action. At the same time, those high levels of rebates were not sustainable, and we did indicate even at that time that we would need to scale them down over time, unfortunately. But nevertheless, the graph does indicate that there is still a high level of rebate paid per particular system. We also will be shortly introducing a differentiated rebate based on the extent of local manufacture in the system. For us, once again, local manufacturer. The manufacture of these systems is a priority. In terms of the uptake, we have per month an indication on this slide of the amount spent on rebates. And you can see the dramatic increase, the exponential increase, which has happened over the past 6 months. From September 2010, you can see that graph is taking off massively. The reason for May 2011 being lower than April is that we're still processing certain claims. Of course, we have to verify that the claims are valid, both in terms of the quality of installation as well as the fact we need to physically check that solar water heater is, of course, installed on the roof before we can pay a claim. So I would expect that May bar will be even higher than April once that is done. So I would agree with Salga that we're coming with a low base, but given this extensive acceleration, I think it's clear that were we to continue this, we would comfortably make a million solar water heaters by 2014. Salga's information is entirely correct. We have installed about 120,000 systems, but as the graph indicates, about 100,000 of the systems have been installed in the last couple of months, so there's a dramatic increase, and a million is easily achievable. It comes down to money. To install 1 million solar water heaters would cost about 5 billion rand. As mentioned previously, Eskom has 1.1 billion rand set aside through the MIPD process for solar water heating. In addition to that, we have approximately 300 million rand which has been made available to us through the Department of Energy, of which 118 million is thought to be allocated, and the balance has been allocated to the municipalities and local authorities as indicated within the presentation from Salga. So the funding of 1.1 billion has been divided into 3 years through the multi-year cost determination period, and for the second year's allocation, that would be fully utilized by July. So we are really installing at a faster rate and our funding allows. We will continue to support the program. We are not going to kill this program. We will continue to support it, but at the same time, we are urgently in the process of urgently looking for additional funding to make sure that the program is sustained. So we will certainly, for the next few months, continue to install at an affordable level until that additional funding is secured, but we want to continue the momentum on that sharply increasing curve as indicated before. In order to stimulate manufacture of local systems, a rebate program is not sufficient, and there I would once again agree with Salga. We need long-term commitments, or shall I say, the solar water heating industry will need long-term commitments and long orders in order to justify putting up a factory. You cannot build a factory just because the rebate program may be there for a couple of months. This has to be sustained. But certainly, I think 1 million could easily become 2 million, 3 million, 5 million solar water heaters in the country. It's a good program for the country, which carries Eskom's full support. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. It was quite illustrious and helpful. Ladies and gentlemen, honourable members, we've had inputs on both INEP and solar
what he does. I hope you too. We did take note of some of the key points that were raised. And I must just also indicate to you that also helpful for Mr. Etzinger to address some of the issues that were raised by Salga, Professor Zanetti. At least it shows that some of the things that we've been expecting are beginning to show shape, that you know, we must really revert up to a minimal level silences who are just as sensitive as like anybody from the president that right down on. At the stage, after conducting the chair, one of our two institutions who are with us are also welcome to make input or comments before we allow members. Those institutions are the Department of Energy itself, which is delegated, as well as the NERPA, because I've had Ms. Manrika made reference to prices and tariffs. I'm sure NERPA must have been quite excited that their presence is acknowledged. Okay, over the two institutions, whoever would like to start first, that's what we'll make an input. Obviously, a lot of reference is made to the fact that the department is expected to do this, the expected department has done this. Thank you very much. Who would like to start and kick off that? Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Take the liberty of introducing your delegation as well.
Okay. My name is Mohamed Kirti from the Department of Energy. I'm a senior manager in education. David Lyons is up front there. He's also a senior manager capital program with me. And then my director is Mohadi Matakhani. He's the chief director for renewable energy site, clean energy. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I apologize again for being late on this meeting. I think we underestimated the Cape Town traffic. But anyway, I would like to highlight that we support the presentation by Salga, because we had a meeting earlier with Salga whereby we believe that most of our input are reflected very fairly on this presentation, and we therefore would like to thank Salga very much on that regard. I just want to highlight a few things. That the requirement of the 80% occupancy, just to highlight that was a risk mitigation strategy, and all we have always said on that is that we cannot substitute the risk mitigation strategy with nothing. All we said is that we always have to work together, because as the Department of Energy, we believed that at that point in time it was actually appropriate to introduce such a risk mitigation strategy, and if there is any substitution, we need to really elaborate on it and agree in terms of the feasibility of it being a risk management approach. And then on the slide number 8, the issue of informal settlements. As a department, we have developed actually we are finalizing what we call the informal settlement electrification strategy, which is one of the issues that has been discussed with, especially with the metro, because this is where we see a lot of informal settlements actually increasing at exponential rates there. And that strategy is mixed up with what we call the metro strategy, whereby we have realized that in the metro, mainly we are dealing with growth rather than the backlog, whichever way you put it, because that's where we're putting a lot of strategies like your BNG strategy, breaking new ground, where we are trying to integrate the housing plans with our electrification plans. And I think what will also be important there is that we a treasury is developing, I mean, it's busy with what they call urban settlement development strategies, whereby we believe that some of the IMF funding or some of the funding can be leveraged from those kind of strategies from treasury, whereby we IMF, as I think the colleagues have alluded that there is a shortage of funding on the IMF program to accelerate electrification program. So therefore, we believe that whichever help we can get in terms of other programs, whereby we can leverage some of the challenges of IMF funding, we would really like to explore those avenues. I would make an example of also the issue of refurbishment is also one of the things that are currently slowing electrification, whereby in other areas, before we do electrification, we need to refurbish some of those areas, and therefore it's actually not in current mandate of IMF to do such things, but we are forced because we cannot do electrification in certain areas if we don't do refurbishment. So that's one of the things that we really would believe that working together with such programs, we would really make more money available on the IMF program to facilitate electrification and in terms of the actual connections themselves, rather than channeling money to infrastructure and those kind of, especially when you talk about bulk. Bulk is one of the serious challenges in terms of electrification, whereby in certain areas really it can be leveraged from other programs, like the funding that is currently being motivated for, that is called the bulk infrastructure. So if all these issues can come up through, we believe that electrification could really benefit massively on that regard. Furthermore, the recommendations by SALGA, we support them fully. And I just want to highlight the one last issue in terms of, I think SALGA is complaining about the top-up funding that we normally use to municipalities. I mean, we request municipalities to top up, and ESCOM we don't. We have always seen ESCOM as the service provider for electrification, and therefore you must remember that they need to account for every cent that they spend. So it was not it's not feasible to initially to expect ESCOM to contribute towards electrification. But with municipalities, there is a lot of funding. And I think it's also with regards to planning, whereby by the time we implement ESCOM project, we are actually sort of sure of the price that is going to cost for because there are processes that are followed before we come to the actual construction and implementation of projects. But when it comes to municipalities, we normally work on what we call an estimated approach of what should the cost collection be at that particular point in time. But I think again, we are reviewing the cost of collection in terms of regional kind of cost of collection, because we have realized that the cost of collection being average on a national level is not doing justice to actual other provinces like your Eastern Cape and KZN. So we are reviewing our strategy in terms of our what we call our subsidy levels, whereby we would definitely give more, in terms of subsidy levels to say, divided into four provinces rather than averaging it on a national basis, because it tends to be out of sync with other provinces with regards to that. So we believe that will actually more or less solve that issue of the top-up funding, because at the moment we still believe that while we are still waiting on the estimated top-up funding for municipalities, we would, on a pro-budgeting purposes, really work on the top-up, on the subsidy level approach. But we do engage poor municipalities when they come and say they cannot top up. We normally look at their projects as a more
you know, microscopic look whether we can actually see if they talk of, I mean, it's not like an abuse of a situation whereby municipalities, when they know that they can come to negotiate, they will just take it away and say, no, we can bend and that connection and then we can reduce connections. But there are strategies to help those municipalities that cannot top up their funding, and then we always communicate. Our doors are always open to talk to all those municipalities. Furthermore, thank you, Chair. We fully support the presentation by Saura. And on the ESCOM side, currently we are already in June, and we have not seen our contract with ESCOM, so we would also want to find out what is the hold up on the side, because time is moving. Thank you, Chair.
Our dilemma, take note of that. Before that, can I give a very warm welcome to Honorable Kamede, the Chair of the Select Committee of International Trade and International Trade and International Relations.
Good morning, Chair, good morning to the committee members and everybody. Chair, my voice is not the right voice to speak today. Not that I just come here today and listen. But since you'd like me to see something, I will see something. I will speak to ESCOM's program for solar water heaters, because those are the people we regulate. Yes, it's true that we allocated 1 million rent to them to do this project. And I must say that it's pleasing to see that they are going on with the project. But I think the rate at which they are doing it is a cause for concern for us. If they are saying that the allocations for this year will be exhausted by July, that presents a problem. It's going to present a problem in the future, because if we make projections going forward, it means that they actually needed more than the 1 billion that were allocated for them over the 3 years of the MIPD2. So the problem now becomes that in our allocations of revenues to ESCOM, we allocate those revenues and we require that they are ring fenced. That is that the revenues for solar water heaters, the 1 billion, is ring fenced, and the other revenues that give to the total of 92 billion that we gave them are also ring-fenced. So the problem for the country is going to be that once they have expended this 1 billion before the 3-year period, then there won't be any funds left for ESCOM to do this project. And yet, we really know that the country does need this project in terms of the fact that we need to make sure that the system is not as tight as it is right now. So the country will be left with that problem now to look at how do we fund these solar water heaters going forward before the end of the 3-year period, when the 1 billion rand is expended, because they cannot use from the other costs that we allocated for them, because those have got to be used for other issues like the salaries and this and that. So, Chair, I'm saying we are happy that they're using the money, but the rate at which they're using it, I think it's a concern for us. Because if you now have to increase that, it means that now we have to increase the tariff for the country. And we would need them to do that, because already people are struggling to pay their bills. So can attest to that. So we are just saying to Parliament that that's going to be a cause for concern. There must be a way of funding the, topping up the funds that we gave them over this 3-year period. Then we can look forward now to the MYPD3 to see whether we cannot learn from this process to say that the 1 billion maybe was an underestimation, and going forward we ask for more than that. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I think thus far all key players have made their input, which is very helpful, and
whoever has the presence of mind to invite NASA, thanks very much. It just shows that at times we need to be quite alert, that we put in as many players as possible, because it's very important that we be combated and do what is, one can say, gap analysis and make sure that all aspects of an issue are addressed. Because what even triggers me is that I know before I joined the committee, one of the key players that was unfortunately under spotlight was CEF. Kamete is not in there, so I'm sure down the line we'll have to remember this case that when we were that once again we don't forget CEF. Because what we want to know is that as they roll out whoever, whether it's INF or whether it's people out of the each and every key player brought in that we have, you know, what one can call a common program, and we're alert to it and see how we refine. I mean, even the last comment by Mr. Mertens was that if the 1 billion was an underestimated, that people wouldn't be honest about it and reduce that. Anyway, before I talk too much, there is a hand right at the back from the department. Thank you.
Thanks. It's Mohadima Tekhana. I just want to emphasize the point that has been made by my colleagues from ESCOM and Banca on the issue of funding. It's indeed, we concurring with them that funding is a challenge in rolling out the program. And I just need to highlight the point that we have been engaging with National Treasury in terms of assisting us to meet, I mean, the target of service delivery in this regard, and we have not lost hope in terms of engaging further and giving motivation based on, I mean, the experience on the ground. And like the speaker that has just, I mean, alluded to the point that we need to learn more on the MYDP2 process so that when we move forward, I mean, we motivate for more funding. I can't dispute that. I mean, it's very clear that for the 1 million target to be, I mean, reached, funding is key. Secondly, on the issue of working together with, I mean, municipalities, there is no debate about that. Together we can do more. We fully agree that we need to join hands in improving efficiency and service delivery. On the use of other DSM initiatives, I mean, like energy efficiency initiatives, like, I mean, heat pumps, I think we need to do more in terms of, I mean, awareness, so that when it gets to the users, it's more accepted, I mean, not over the solar users as such. So it's been noted, it's something that we need to discuss further in terms of how can it be implemented by all the participants.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Honorable Director. There is a hand here from which department?
My name is Colonel Tom from the Department of Public Enterprises, the shareholders.
Welcome, really.
Did you say his name is Tom?
I'm
Did you say his name is Comrade Tom?
Yes.
Comrade Tom.
No, I'm Tom Machine.
Yes, it just shows how we've you know, stayed honest there. We've got all the players there. Okay, Mr. Tom, you're welcome.
Thanks, I think one needs to join the other colleagues from the Department of Energy and NASA in agreeing in principle that there's a need for us to look at what needs to be done to look at additional funding to top up in an area where there will be shortfall. And I think that this becomes an eye-opener from our point of view, so that we're able to support ESCOM when it will come and say, no, look, we need to go and look for additional funding on this aspect because there's a need. And I'm raising this because when we look into the basket of what ESCOM ought to focus on, the core issues ensure that there's a secure supply in the current phases going forward. Now, if, for example, there's not enough funding both for the annual program and for the solar water system, program. It means that all of us, we need to sit down, as the Muhau put it correctly, that collectively the government must sit down and discuss what are the funding requirements which we need to put forward for the INEP with our collecting treasurer, but also for this solar water heating program. To what extent are we able to leverage on what we have? But to this, Chair, and I think that Andrew talked to this thing, that we don't need to look into the rollout of a program as the product, but what are the impact it has on society? Does the program become a catalytic driver for skill development for local citizens, which we need to be able to see a thing, because we can't continue to support a program moving we saw finished products outside the country come here just in stock. And that's why we say that if we're going to support and want to go and solve additional funding, it has to be linked to the thrust of what government poster is all about in terms of local section going forward. And I think that would be one issue which we look into. The last issue, Chair, that and last said that we do support the views which are said. It says around the I did listen to the presentation as we made by ESCO. I become very much worried that we're not quantifying the funding requirement to deal with the strengthening of the backbone, which you needed for you to do your education. Because if you quantify, you put a budget here, we don't know what the percentage need to be spent on the backbone strengthening. But we'll then be able to look into what are the additional, because you might find that the target for connection might not be reachable because we're spending much on the backbone, and we need to know how if we do demonstrate that, and as we must then be able to say how we support this thing going forward. And I think that it would be okay on our part if we are able to be demonstrated with that we'll be able to support the other colleagues as well.
Just before you go, another question time, backbone. Spend a few seconds.
Is the distribution network required? For example, if you need to install sub transformers, substations, to ensure that the end customer does not get an inferior services. Your light, because you're the light person, you're the last person, you get a dim light, while the person up front gets a better bright light. That's where you find that the other customers in the same quality or in the same world don't get the same quality of services. And that's what we're trying to say, that we need to be able to provide service which is of quality to our customers across the basis. I think it's commendable what we demonstrate that we'll spend enough on BWO and be the question which we need you to also to look into it is that this figure can be correct if we look into the fact that the program, if we go back and look at the first slide, we'll show that 94 up to whatever. But if we look from 2006 to date, it might be correct. Therefore, we need to be able to look into, in totality, in the program, what has been our movement to change the complexion. But we're not saying that we're spending on we're spending $1.2 billion on BE or BWO. As a fraction of what? And that's the point what you say, that you must then be able to reflect. Either you must tell us the baseline is 26, and therefore we can then be able to measure whether are we really making tangible changes to the lives of our people. Or if the backward to 94, then we'll then be able to reflect into what are the real interventions we're putting in place. Thanks.
That's the careful speaking. Honorable Ross, I don't think we should even take it as a shareholder book. Can I hand over back to the chair now? Thanks very much. I'm sure Honorable Dexter, now you hear from the chair, I will take it from there.
Well, thank you very much, Comrade Chair. Honorable members, it is now your turn for interrogation, questions. whether you want to fight, whether you want to make peace, whether you want to be happy, honor for us, honor for Allah. Perfect boy. Honorable Dexter. Honorable Manuhula. Honorable the big man that has saved Cape Town, South Africa. Honorable Mulato. Honorable Hadebe. Honorable Andralina. Of ID, Eric Lucas, in that order, Father Ross.
Yes, I'm glad to share all this, but because we're speaking about funding and my problems also regarding the distribution networks, which is a prerequisite for the INAP program, in terms of the funding where we heard that the funding is also extremely conditional in terms of distribution. It's very vague, and I would like, if it's seen that Eskom is here, perhaps just some indication as to the funding in our ADAM program on that conditional basis. But delivery on the INAP program, we see that municipalities only delivered about 38% of the target in terms of the INAP program. And that raises some questions to me, Chair. Should it not be then, as agreed in the presentation, be totally outsourced in terms of the IDP program through the municipalities to Eskom, which will then take full responsibility of this program? That's the one question. Because if you look at municipalities, we see that there is a backlog of, I think, 27 billion in terms of distribution, only 38% of the targets being met, and indeed that they don't come up to scratch. In terms to the presentation also by Helga, the rural of 75% of the backlog. The presentation I find very strange, where they say apparently consultants approach municipalities to be appointed for designing and management implementation of projects, and then desperate MN take the first available support they can get. Surely there's a business practice where you make inquiries as to the competency of consultants and sort of a track record of success. And I think Target just needs to explain this. In terms of rural, I don't think this presentation is good enough regarding the concerns. Yes, Chair, I think we have to have a coherent approach, and I agree that I think municipalities, Eskom, the Department of Energy needs to get together to see that we sort out this issue. Because if we look at it, there's 20% of people out there not having electricity, and the severe circumstances, especially in the scale, we can just imagine that we need to get together in terms of funding models. We need to get together coherently, all the parties, to see that we need like some funding. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Firstly, I would like to start by saying all the presentations speak to one another. And the thrust around all of them is coordination of the different plans and our ability to do maintenance work. All of them are centered around that, obviously with the core business being majority of supply. So, but I'll put my point is questions so that I can get more information to avoid drawing conclusions when perhaps some information that could be given that can make me draw different conclusions. On page 3 of the SALGA presentation, I come from Northwest Province, and so my focus looks first at Northwest Province, but I see similarities with Gauteng. That 83% of projects have been completed, and then the 17 outstanding, obviously, 83 plus 17 will give you 100%. But now there's 50%, now there's zero there on the on the on that other 50%, I don't know whether it's greater than or less than. The 70%. Yeah, that's what I wanted to do. And if that is what is said, I don't agree with this report. There are many people without electricity in the Northwest. That's my constituency. So we should be able to say how do we arrive at that. But that being a side issue, I think we must commend Sanga for having given a good presentation, but I would have started by that, which comes up with a lot of mind-boggling ideas. Page 8 makes reference to the current situation. And my question on page 8 is the issue that focuses on the informal settlement. Mr. President, we come from a history where, and ESCOM in the presentation confirmed this, that previously electricity was meant for the urban area. Initially it was meant for real urban areas, not harmful urban areas like the townships. It was initially a metaphor for the suburbs and the cities, and the industries. And then we moved into getting it into townships. Now it's going to informal settlement. And if something between informal settlement and the rural areas can come in, it will go into that. When are we really going to start talking about the rural people's areas? Is it because they don't have a tech base? I don't know, but that's where we have the bulk of the majority of the people and the citizens of this country living. My question there is as to whether your focus in terms of this recommendation that you ultimately rate as a head is to focus first on the informal settlement and then to the rural area. And my problem is the informal settlement never ends unless we make a law in South Africa that says we stop it, it is illegal, we will demolish it. For as long as we have not said so, they will always be coming up. Then on page 10, when you get to page 10, it becomes clear that the issue of coordination is becoming a serious issue. And my question is, has there been not only from SALGA, also from ESCOM, from the department, from provinces, from municipalities, and all other stakeholders in the process of electrification, has there been any thought of a coordinating structure? You make reference to INEP as a coordinating structure, but has there been any forum where these stakeholders can be able to meet and compare their plans to say, this is what we intend to do, and the others must say, this is what we want to do, and some sort of an integrated approach or knowledge of who the other player is doing is accumulated. Is there anything of that nature? Or is it that everybody does what he likes, we meet each other on the ground? As such, it creates the misalignment that you raise in page 12. Indeed, there is no such a matter. On page 13, you make reference to inner regional offices playing the role of coordinating. Or you say we need some shared capacity to provide technical support to the undercapacitated municipality, and this role can be best played by INEP officers. And then that they should also be the point of coordination between the electrification projects. The regional office of INEP, who will be there? Who is involved in that office? Is it the same idea that I'm thinking of? we work in an office as a convener, or is that that office with the whole power of coordination on the plans of other institutions which have their own rights? If we could get that a little bit clearer on that issue. The other question here is, given, I'll start by saying that ESCOM has given the best shot that it could over the years in an attempt to electrify South Africa. That cannot be just taken as if nothing happened. But the demand is becoming so high. The development we are aware of building new power stations and looking at alternative energy sources to try and offload. But what is the status quo? Are we currently able to supply electricity? We see signs of some cars. Are we getting into that situation that we had earlier of power, load shedding? Maybe we should just get an indication as to whether we are getting there, or distance are just cars by municipalities for maintenance. Lastly, a few other questions. What is the role of CEF? Or who else is accredited other than ESCOM to provide solar water heaters? These questions are linked. CEF becomes just as a provocative question. I think Stephen raised it as well. But there might be more others. Role players in that particular area. Are they accredited to assist in that supply? The threat that has been raised sharply by Salga has been that comparing the speed with the deadline, it is unlikely that we shall be able to meet the deadline in the supply of solar water heaters. Now, given that, is ESCOM carrying that burden alone, or are there other role players that could be moving into that IPP vendor? If they are, how can they be put into the play field so that they can be able to also assist in the rollout? Now, a very interesting point that has been raised, and this is surely my last point, is the point raised by Salga. Let's say, what we are doing with the solar heater is essentially a welfare intervention aimed at improving the quality of life for the poor households, than about reducing the existing demand from the grid. That is a very, very, very important question. Now, as it boggles your mind, you begin to say, but if you put in solar heaters into the households that have electricity, you are obviously saving that electricity which you can then use in the development of informal settlement. Because I'm sure I may be thinking wrong that the slow pace at which more houses are getting built is because if they do, they will not be electrified. If we make solar heaters, put them into the houses that have no electricity, you are obviously making no savings anyway. Where are we going? Do we really believe the focus must be on the poor households, or do we think we should be able to save electricity from those who have electricity already, so as to can be able to save for those who need? Thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you, Chair. I also have a number of questions. Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting presentation, quite timely. I mean, I actually brought up these issues in Parliament last week around the solar water heater program, and the Minister of National Planning told me that this program is steaming ahead and that there's no problems. I mean, clearly there are problems. I mean, firstly, 60,000 solar water heaters in a year is not steaming ahead. It's steaming ahead from our base before, but we're going to fall far short of reaching the 1 million target by 2014. Unless you see a massive exponential scale up over the next few years. And as Andrew from ESCOM was saying, we don't have the funding for this at this point in time. But let's put this in context, because the problem is the way that this debate is framed at the moment is to say that, well, we need an extra 4 billion rand in order to roll out 1 million solar water heaters. Where are we going to get the money from? We're going to have to increase the tariffs, you know, and this kind of a model gets put forward. The issue that I ask for is that if you look at this, they say 5 billion rand for 1 million solar water heaters. It's equivalent to a savings of about 600 megawatts that gets taken off the grid. If you then times that by, say, 5, we're talking then about 50 billion rand or 25 billion rand to save us 3,000 megawatts for 5 million solar water heaters. That's equivalent to essentially Maduki Power Station. So it's 25 billion rand to save the equivalent amount of power than what it's costing us 125 billion rand to build in terms of a coal-fired power station. So that is why this project is so important. It's also important because we can do this a lot quicker than we can build a new coal-fired power station. So if we are interested in security of supply, we have to ensure that we meet the target of 1 million solar water heaters by 2014. It makes sense from every angle that you look at it. The issue is where we're going to get the money from now. And the questions can be raised as to why NERSA, in fact, didn't model this into their calculations around the tariffs. And why is it that ESCOM didn't ask for the 5 billion rand up front in order to reach the 1 million target by 2014? We clearly haven't modeled for this yet. And we have to get this right now if we're going to reach it as a country. So I would strongly push that forward. I also don't think, though, that it should only be ESCOM's responsibility. And one of my questions that I would ask ESCOM as well is to say that, yes, we've seen a massive uptake in the rebate system. The problem is, though, is that for many middle-class households, which is probably where the bulk of this is getting taken up, some people can afford to pay the major upfront costs. You're still having to pay about 8,000 rand as a household, you know, and those people are probably the ones that are taking it up now. The issue is you're probably going to reach a ceiling of those households that can afford such a major upfront cost. Then you might see a slowdown in the rebate, and that's the problem going forward. So we need to look at that as well. So I would say, why don't we also look at things like what has happened to the debate around the bylaw for new buildings? That new buildings should have solar water heaters. Why don't we stipulate this? Is this something that we can look at from a municipal level? That would be my question to Solga. The other issue, we talk about the insurance industry, and yes, there might be agreements around that. I'd like to know more details about that. And can we not regulate it? Can we not, in fact, insist that they're putting solar water heaters? You know, the time for these voluntary measures is over. We have to start really pushing energy efficiency. Otherwise, we are going to start seeing load shedding and constraints to our economy. The other one is just about, what about the 20 billion rand green fund that the DVSA has? Can we not use this in conjunction with municipalities where the upfront cost of finance that municipalities can then bill customers 200 rand a month as a way of paying back that so that customers don't have to pay the upfront financial cost? These are the kinds of things that we need to really start looking at and start to push forward if we're going to have any hope of reaching the 1 million target. Then just lastly on the INET program. I mean, when I hear ESCOM talk about the INET program, ESCOM made major progress in electrification. I give them complete credit for that. Up until 2001, we made major progress. The problem that we face now, as you said, 75% of the backlog is in deep rural areas. And ESCOM has itself said that it costs a fortune to get the grid out to these areas. What we need to be doing, I think, is why are we only thinking in terms of grid expansion? Can we not be looking at mini-grids? Can we not be looking at renewable energy for these areas? I mean, I go to one area in deep rural Eastern Cape, where in fact people, households themselves, are buying solar panels with absolutely no assistance from government and putting these into their house and are charging car batteries and are getting some kind of electricity services out of it. You know, I've seen a wind turbine put up by private people at their own cost, and people charge their batteries on it. isn't it time if we start to look beyond the grid and actually start to see how do we get these mini grids working in deep rural areas and in a way that can actually provide sufficient energy resources for people's needs in those areas? It is possible to do this, and I think we need to, you know, move away from this model that we simply have to expand the grid. China did this very successfully and managed to, in fact, push up their PV panel production in China, and that was the impetus behind it. And because of that, now the price of PV panels are coming down at an exponential rate. So surely that's what we should be looking for in the future with regards to INF in deep rural areas. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Well, I think a fair amount of the sentiment I would express has been covered by Honourable Khaila. You know, I don't think when you raise these issues, people become defensive because they think it's an attack on Eskom. It's not an attack on the individuals in the organization, who I think we understand work within a limited budget. But frankly speaking, Jefferson, we can come here year after year after year, and we are just lying to ourselves and lying to the public. Because the strategy that lies behind this will never achieve the results that we can. And we've got to do an analysis of why that's the case. I've got my views. I think the way the energy sector is structured, because Eskom is a monopoly, because the coal lobby is so powerful, that is what stops us from getting the kind of radical policies that we need. And as Honourable Khaylan has pointed out, we can come here and complain that we don't have money and we've got, you know, we've limited budget. But yet the things that can be done that make sense, like this, are not factored in on the scale at which they need to. Frankly speaking, I think it's shocking. It's absolutely shocking that we live in a country with so much free solar, sunlight, and that these are the figures of rollout. It's a disgrace, Jefferson. And I'm not saying it's a disgrace to Eskom, it's a disgrace to us as a nation. Because we know what the targets are around emissions, we know what the savings are required, etc. But we come here and we're complacent every year. And it's now, in the life of this parliament, the third time we're discussing this. In the life of, you know, the last 17 years, I think it's 20 or 30 times that this issue has been raised. Frankly speaking, it's just not good enough. When are we going to see the radical policies that will be put in place that allow people, first of all, that deregulate, so that not only with relation to solar heaters, but with generating electricity generally, as we see around the world, that empowers households, companies, firms to do that and to sell that back to the grid. It would be the most empowering thing for households because it would limit the extent to which they are relied on carbon-based energy. It would generate incomes and jobs and so on. But if you're going to, frankly speaking, mess around with 20,000 heaters and 60,000 solar heaters, then we're not really serious about a commitment to the environment or to the sector itself. Secondly, Chair, on the financing, because the model is a state-centric one where we say you've got this money, you must apply the rebate, blah, 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 instead of using it to empower industry and putting through the funds through to the private sector so that we can generate in the form of an industrial policy, which the government says it's doing in the in its policy, we instead have a thing where you're developing economic strategy on the one side in the Trade and Industry Department and in the Department of Economic Development, and the energy sector is doing something else. Now, again, I'm not saying this because I want people to not vote for the MP. The elections are coming in a few years' time. I think we must have an honest debate as MPs. The government departments are screwing it up. They're screwing it up, Chair. There's no other way to put it, because for as long as they talk about doing that and they do something else, you won't get the results that you need. Now, I think, Chair, we must be very hard as a committee, as members of parliament across the party, and say it's not good enough. We need to bring these people from the various government departments together and sit here and say, what is the financing mechanism that we can put in place, and it can be done, Chair, that will take $5 billion and replace it with $25 billion, that will put the support in for small industries, for small firms to do the work that's required. If we do it that way, we'll speed up the results and we'll achieve what we want in terms of targets a lot quicker. And the spin-offs will be better. But, Jefferson, I don't want to beat about the bush. I think what we see here demonstrates a complete lack of commitment to the things that we say that we want to achieve. And I'm saying that applies to all of us, not just to this group.
Thank you, Honorable Dexter.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, a lot of what I was going to say has been said. I've just got a question on ESCOM. We've got 9 provinces, and I see here they've got Northern Province, I don't know where it comes from. Chairperson, what I wanted to say was that yes, ESCOM, we are in the low shading time, and ESCOM is saying to us, let's save energy. We are doing that, but there is somewhere where it is lacking. When we are looking at the houses there, the illegal connections, you only looking at the backyard room. And you forget the RDP houses where you find about 6 to 10 families in one house. It's an RDP house which has been converted into 10 different houses. That one is cooking the other 10 stoves at the same time. How are we going to really save electricity by so doing, and how are we going to be short of load shedding when it comes like that? Yes, other people, it's going to be dim somewhere, and somewhere it's going to be bright. I just wanted to say to Sauga, yes, Sauga, all these things have been said, but I'm worried about this removing and reinstalling of meters. Is it not another way of letting people start to join about this thing? When you've got a meter and it's being removed, and then what happens then afterwards? Because sometimes they're going to say, no, it was here, there was a meter here, now it has been removed. What way do then people start to do it? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Morata.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have got different ways of agitating and presenting methods. Some say the demonstration of lack of commitment and that the performance has been pathetic. Of course, we come from various backgrounds and of different political shapes. My view would always be consistent that what we see here is tremendous progress that has been made by this entity. Of course, there's still more to be done. And it would be wrong for us to walk out of this room thinking that there are no off-grid interventions, that we are so fascinated with the grid that the department and the entities are not playing any role in terms of making sure that there's delivery on off-grid intervention. I think that's a very important point. Everybody who live here is misinformed. Chairperson, it's very important that, for me, I mean, I'll just make general comments. I agree with the views of Honorable Salau that there should be better coordination between the department, ESCOM, and the regulator, because it sometimes becomes so disconcerting for us to realize that either the department or the regulator or ESCOM is discovering new information from some of these presentations. For instance, on the issue of 80% occupancy rate before electrification, the response of the department becomes is part of our risk management measure. We are open to discussion for any other option. I don't think it would be appropriate for us to have this type of responses here. We expect that through the forums that they have, that they should be able to interact and find solutions instead of discovering problems here. The second one around the issue of the regulator and the regulatory. You expect that if you're a regulator, and that's partly my criticism on both the regulator and the regulator, NERSA and ESCOM, on the regulator, I would expect that, you know, those who are being regulated would have to submit periodic reports to show compliance with certain targets or mandate that have been given by the regulator. But for us then to say in this meeting, we welcome the regulator bringing ahead but the challenge that they are exceeding their mandate, which is a welcome thing in the other way. But I think it would be important that the regulator and the department sit down and talk together so that on this matter it's very clear to all of us that there's a shortfall, but that funding shortfall should be funded through various methods, whether it's the user pay or the fiscals must come in. But those are the things that I just wanted to highlight. Two questions that I would want to pose to Salga. You're mentioning that in 2010-11, 28,000 was only connected, which is 34%. I haven't heard the reasons why we have that low figure. And you also made mention of the fact that the non-distributing municipalities do not have electricity departments and completely rely on consultants. I just want to find out, what becomes the role of the district council? Is there any way that the district council can be empowered to play a supervisory or project management role on some of these projects in rural areas? Is that not a way that you can address the concern? And the last one, which was fortunately raised by DPE on the platform, the issue of the distribution network, if we could get an indication from ESCOM about their efforts in strengthening their own distribution network. We had a hearing, just to make the last point, Chairperson, we had a hearing, could be through, I can't recall, where the department clearly put their vision on how they intend to strengthen the distribution network in the metro through the ADAM program. And various ideas were being shared on how this whole project can be financed. But also I just want us to know, and that's the area that NERSA must be aware of, that SALGA is complaining about the tariff design, but the tariff design is not taking into consideration the challenges that are being faced by the society. It's more a tariff design that focused on ESCOM. But I wouldn't want them to comment now. Be unfair to put the regulator on the spot, but I just want them to know that. Thank you, Chairperson. But yeah, I need to emphasize, for me, I see tremendous progress, and I think we'll do well by focusing on some of these issues.
Thank you, Honorable Muroto. Honorable Khadem.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just wanted to check some few issues. Well, just have a concern in terms of the synchronization of the reporting within the field of government. But in terms of the funding of the ILF, they will also give a very serious problem in terms of them ensuring that, you know, the local government also align themselves. Because by the time when the budget, you know, is being already announced, you know, for the local government, I mean by the provincial government, local government, you know, has already started, you know, implementing its own program. And it's also I think it's one of the other challenges that they've also going through, that they must be able to deal with. Chairperson, what is the rationale behind, in terms of the solar water heater, in terms of the decision of the rebate? You know,
I just want to get an understanding in terms of the followers HR page, where the date is going to be effective from the 10th of June. What is the rationale behind this decision? The other aspect, obviously, I think Honorable Mulato just mentioned that this requirement that 80% occupants of the housing within the development sector, they must be, you know, the housing must be filled first. I'm trying to understand who came with this requirement that it must be 80% of the people filling up the housing. Because I can't understand, you know. My thinking is that when you provide services, you provide 100% service so that people can be able to go in there. But if you provide half, how do you expect people to live? Because electricity is no longer, you know, a privilege for people of, you know, rural areas. They are right and they must be able to get it without any challenge. Chairperson, I wanted to get a clarity from this call as well, that if Telkom has taken note what the president has said, that issues of education and health, the first priority of this government. What gives them this delay? That we are almost closer to the end of the, you know, a 5K term of this government. But, you know, they're taking it slow in giving or electrifying clinics and schools. Clinics which are important, that's supposed to be able to operate. And I believe these things that are not being electrified, they're the ones that are in the rural areas. The meaning is that they are not putting, you know, interest of rural people at front. I really have a concern. What are the challenges? Why are they having a challenge in terms of ensuring that those areas are being electrified? The other question relates to I just said that, you know, they are raising the issue that, you know, probably they need to review the process of funding and get more funding for the solar water heater. But I don't see us moving forward with these things, because every time they are bringing one and the same problem. But they must give you a progress, they can't even, you know, give you a halfway progress about that thing. Because, you know, when you're saying we're going to have a very clear challenge about solar authorities, you must tell us that at least we've installed close to that 1 million solar data. But instead, there is a very, very serious challenge that they haven't done anything. And if you can check most of those areas that they targeted, some of those areas they don't have most of the sunlight. You go to areas that receive most of the sunlight, that is in Mpumalanga and Limpopo. They are not being, you know, put it in terms of this solar data. You know, they must give a sense in terms of this thing. Doesn't give sense to say you still need more funding in terms of progressing with this thing, but your reporting progress doesn't show that at least you are moving ahead. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable.
Honourable Chairperson, a lot has been covered already. I do agree that the energy department must have a re-look at the whole system, especially when my colleagues referred to the capital needed to fund the project and how we're going to do it. There are people in the private sector who are prepared. And there's, for instance, this weekend it was in the papers, just to give an example, of the 4,000 megawatt EIAs that have been approved for wind farms. However, the program only allows for 700 megawatts. So now what's going to happen now? In the deep rural areas where there's a lack of electrification, I look at KZN with almost 660,000 households, and the Eastern Cape, I presume, the figure is so bad one can't even mention it, but 25% would be more or less 600,000. Now, with the solar geyser program, at one stage you could put in a solar geyser plus 5 lights. Is that not going to lighten the entire energy grid to go to a small, deep rural area? Whereas if you put a solar water geyser or system up and it gets 5 lights and a plug that can drive a small appliance like a radio or something, mustn't we look at that? Then I think NASA is busy holding a gun to our heads again with tariff increases. But I just want to say that we must remember that the private domestic consumption is only 18% of electricity in South Africa. Then on slide 3 of the Selga thing, presentation, sorry, I didn't mean to be derogatory. They talk about 363 projects in total. So my honourable colleague here that's worried about only 6 in the northwest, I think he was just looking for more projects. But if there are only 363 projects, how many more should there be to cover what should be covered? And then with the national housing program, we find that a lot of the housing, new housing developments are being built, and then there is no money for the electrical connection. It must actually become a prerequisite that who is going to fund it. Is it national housing or is it the local municipality? Because often the one says, no, you're responsible, and then the other one says, no, you're responsible. And in this entire conversation that we've had this morning, it goes about silos, and everybody is operating in a silo. And if I remember correctly, that is a word bandied around here in Parliament quite often. And we say we mustn't operate in silos. Together we could do better. Ha! Silo is the word. So I think we must be very careful and start looking at this thing properly. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Palmina. Honourable Luca.
I think the theme is electricity for all, and I think we should try and adhere to that if we are serious. And I also must say that I'm disappointed that the two rural areas, KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape, we who have a greater population, are not seen as such. And for some reason, I would like to know why are they have to take the back seat. The other thing is that we've been talking about solar water heating for years, and the longer we take, the more expensive it gets to install, and that is the basic problem. And if I can go as far back as 1996, I've been talking about this, install these heaters, and the place we could have started to save power was government building. The facility was there. And I don't know why we haven't, but now that we talk about it, this whole thing will be progress. However, there is another handicap, there's 1 billion, which is insufficient. And now we're going to replay. What is going to happen to the people who have been employed to install these heaters? And the money is not there anymore. Are they going to be sitting idle? So that's another way to finance. which could have put better plan, it could be utilized better. I'm also of the opinion that with town planning, they should be fully involved. No plan should be passed before it is. It has to have heaters, solar water heaters. It has to have a proper lighting in the house, because then we would be serious. But the town planners just pass anything as long as it's there and the job is done. So I'm really concerned. And then the solar panels, it's the quality of solar panels which is important, because a good solar panel lasts between 50 to 20 years. But you can also get, which is an inferior panel, which would go there. So we got to look at these things. What are we getting? Are we going for the best or not? I just want to talk about the rural areas. I come from a rural area. I lived part of my life in Cape Town. Here in Cape Town, I've got electricity, I put my radio on, I put my TV on. When I go home, and because I now get an inferior service, I won't be able to utilize these things. And that is what is unfair. The people in the rural area say we deserve the same. So I say, because I come from a rural area, we deserve the same. We should be treated equally and given what we. So it is unfair to think that we can to for our conscience say, okay, you've got one light and you've got one paraffin stove and you've got one vegetable stove and you can use these things differently and you can't iron and you. So it is very, very wrong. I think we need to have better planning. The human settlements department also should be dragged into this year. Because I'm concerned when I hear that there is an informal settlement electrification plan. Are we going to have informal settlement for the rest of our lives and the rest of our great-grandchildren's lives? Are there no plans for the future to get rid of these things and let everyone look like civilized human beings? We come from an era where we were thinking as citizens. But today, let us not keep other people as thinking as citizens. We must give them what we want. And I think that is where I come from, and that's what I feel, and I feel very strongly about it. And time is money. The longer we prolong, the more expensive the whole issue becomes.
Thank you.
Quite a lot has been covered, but I'll make a few comments and excuse my language somewhat. Firstly, on SALTA, I think SALTA would need to be honest with us and the country with regards to the licenses, distribution licenses, because they shouldn't just hold space because they are municipalities, they have the licenses, but municipalities that do not have capacity. So holding on into the licenses without capacity, I think they need to be doing something. I think they should better advise us what best to do. On the issue of the utilization of the 1.2 billion by July, I'm really not worried. Never might be worried, but I'm not worried. But I'm worried about the speed and check whether we really do have that capacity going forward at a very short period of time. That is my worry. We do want service delivery. Is there value for money? I think it's one thing we need to do on our oversight. Service delivery is what we want, but not at this booming speed. Also, another point is, Honorable Lucas, when he goes home, he passes my rural town, Kinyinjovu. And all these projects, whether you talk about solar or water heaters, free basic electricity, they fly above my community. Things that they hear that we talk about in Parliament, things that are not with them, and they'll never have them if we have this approach. So is there a way in which we can be honestly biased to the rural areas? Because there's no way that you can try and address the imbalances without starting there. I can stay in town, I can get the solar water heater, my family and all the siblings, what has it? And they say, he's staying in parliament, we'll get solar water heater. So that's the reality. You know, last week I was speaking in the home, and I made one example just about energy light. Where I stay, they need candles. And candles cost between 12 and 15 rand a packet. And then if you have 14 hearts, 20 hearts, that goes to about 300 rand a day. That's the reality of life that the people in rural areas face. So if we don't address this issue of electricity, the rural people will suffer forever. So we need some biasness. Just a political decision to be conscious and say, we start in rural areas, we forget about the rest. You know, lastly, Chair, you know, we always say the poor must benefit. That's the issue. That when we start a program, the question we ask, who is to benefit out of this program? Then we should have a time where we say, after a year, after 2 years, say, who has benefited out of this program? So these are the questions we need to ask ourselves, with all the departments, even in our oversight, and check if the poor have benefited, the people in the rural area have benefited. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Keep the hand or miss the hand. No one. Okay, Honourable Members and colleagues, we're now going to break for 5 minutes, this 5 minutes. And there's some tea at the back. And those that want to relieve themselves, go and relieve yourself. But please come back. You've got the tendency that you go and release yourself, and I don't know whether you disappear somewhere along the living room. Please come back so that we can start. It's now 22, we need to be back at 11:45 so that we can start getting the answers. Thank you very much.
I can't say
where I am.
No.
What?
you hold the government.
I know.
I said, but you say I have
changed it, but I don't need help to. The rest of you guys are not coming back to me. Oh, yes, I've already closed the floor. Oh, I don't know. The dog should be the main for the table of August. Because we don't have a floor for the provision anymore. But still,
can we start with
Sharon
over now to my co-chair, Nicolana, to carry further the program. Thank you. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, the crunch time. Let me just abuse my policy. What is BW? Acronym in South Africa. Okay, there it is. There's been a list of questions. I did observe everyone feverishly, noting them down. Who wants to shoot first? Salga. Over to you, Salga.
Thank you, Chair. There were quite a number of four or five questions that focused on the table on slide 3. So I'll start with that one that explains what is contained in that. The first one, which I think probably could have been a misinterpretation, related to Northwest and progress made. It's not to say that there is no more need for projects, but what it says that for the year 2011-12, what was budgeted for was 6 projects, and progress in respect of those 6 projects is just that 17% of them are past 50% progress, and 83% of those 6 projects are complete. But it doesn't mean that in the next year there won't be a need to implement further projects. Which links to the other question that was saying we had planned for 11-12, that is the government. There was a plan for 11-12 for 363 projects. The question is, what should be the number of projects required for us to eventually meet the target of 2014? I think this government would be in a better position to respond to that. The other question that related to this slide was explained the 28%. I think the explanation that has provided the House is that it links to all of the issues that were raised at the end about implementation and alignment and so on. But the point is, most of these projects are in the 75% area of their block, the rural area. This is where, as I indicated, municipalities are not distributors, but are implementing these projects to hand over them to ESCOM, primarily because people in rural areas, and as well as councillors in those rural municipalities, are saying the priority of government is to focus and improve development in rural areas. And therefore, we cannot say because you are in the rural municipality, you are licensed to distribute only in town, or your KFC, you are licensed to distribute in town, you are not going to take steps to improve access to services in rural areas. You have to find a way of doing that. So what then tends to happen, which links to the second question, is that the municipal manager who does not have an electricity department because it's not a distributor of electricity,
then has to completely use out of our capacity to implement this project and to have them all. That's basically what will happen. I think a related question was that of municipal manager. I don't know if it came across badly in my slide, where was the municipal manager take the next available support in the context of this session. The point is that they are looking to see who can assist me to implement in a context in which I don't have an electricity department and yet I have to meet the needs of the rural areas. In that context, then they go and find private sectors to do that. But what we're saying is that when they do such a practice, they are exposed to health government, because when you don't have a technical person on your side who reviews what private sector is doing, tendency is that private sector will cut corners as much as they could and maximize profits at the expense of quality of service. Hence, you need capacity for a technical person to look at what is being done. It is in that context then we're making a suggestion that at an operational level it would assist those kind of municipalities, because also it would delay progress so much. You could say, okay, municipalities, because they're not distributors in this area, stay away from implementing projects, because we deprive ourselves of the sheer number of institutions that would be implementing programs if we were to do that. And therefore, we have to say, stay away, let ESCOM at its own case implement electrification in rural areas. We will be deciding ourselves. So rather than do that, we are saying, let us have some kind of a shared capacity in the INEP regional offices, which will play the role of a technical government person who looks at what is being done by private sector as we are implementing this project, so that we do implement projects that are appropriate, and secondly, the quality of work is assured. That's what we're suggesting there. So it is practice that it should be done like that, but I think we need to understand it in context. I think a related question was, or a comment was that local government must be honest. Why keep license when they don't have capacity? I think this is raised in the context of rural areas, I think appears to be. But this is raised in the context of urban spaces. I think we should understand that in the urban spaces, we have made a point that that's where we have the least backlog in those areas. But also we do acknowledge that most of those distributors do have almost 50% of what they require. Not that they don't advertise, but they just don't get to the right people to fill in the other 50% of positions. Over and above that is the resources to actually pay the full complement of the staff that they need to run those. Now, that for me is not something that you can solve by saying somebody else take over the license, because it's an issue of skills in the country. It's an issue that has come up, it's an issue of everyone else would face if they were to be responsible for this. Now, we have made a comment in our debate in the NCOP during the budget speech of the minister, to say with the Department of Energy, just like the Department of Water Affairs is doing and other departments are doing, should be working with the Department of Higher Education and Training to look at how do we implement a strategy that will develop skills for the sector of energy. Because it's not the fault of, I think, it cannot be attributed to municipality that there are no skills in the country. National government has a responsibility of mobilizing skills in the country, hence the Department of Higher Education and Training that is responsible for that. But we're saying that as partners and stakeholders in the sector, we want to work with that department to ensure that we mobilize skills. I think that's pretty much deals with the slide number one and related question. The other question that was raised, I think on coordination, my colleague will further add on that. The other one was about slide 16, that I was, I think it was probably misunderstood. In this slide, I think it was at the far right column. One thing that I'm focusing on, already these are not programs that are implemented by municipalities, at least from the ones that that were approved in 2010, 2011. They are not implemented by municipalities anyway. These are grants in kind to the municipalities implemented by ESCOM. It's only in the case of Mkobo that there is a consideration of the direct transfer to the municipality. And I think to that extent, I think ESCOM was in a better position to deal with progress in respect of implementing this, this program. But the point, though, we're making overall about this plan is that conceptually, I think one can separate the solar water giver program into two. One part of it being essentially one that is aimed at improving the life of poor households. And we think in a country that is focusing and alleviating poverty, this is a legitimate intervention on its own to implement. So there's nothing wrong in our view as well to have a program that is focusing on making sure that poor households have access to warm water. But the other part of it, in our view, should be the one that is about reducing existing demand from the grid, which is what I think, in my understanding, is that ESCOM implementing through the rebate system to say those who already have given, let's find a way of using renewable energy to heat water as opposed to using coal based energy to heat water. That is about taking load from the grid in that sense. And in our view, there's a lot that could be done to scale that up. I think the comments have been made by members of Parliament in that regard, and we need money. And I think at this point we might add as well that in the MYPD2 application of that, one of the comments that we made, and we tried to push this argument very forcefully, was that it did appear that the bias of the application itself and what was approved at the end tended to be on generation and use of coal for generation. We didn't think, and we still believe for today, we didn't think that this intervention of solar water heating was given as much emphasis as it could have been and compared appropriately with the other, with the generation intervention. In fact, the way we put it was that demand side management has not been structured adequately in the way that application was dealt with. And we think going forward, we might want to do that. We are very glad that NEMSA appreciates this now, ESCOM appreciates this, but we do need to spend more money on solar water heating and therefore make that money available in terms of the application, the approval of the application. The other question that was raised is what happened to the bylaw in respect of solar water heaters in your building? Most municipalities, or a few number of municipalities, did develop this bylaw. At the time when we wanted to enforce these bylaws, one thing that came up was that those bylaws cannot be legitimately enforced without a national legislation that allows those bylaws to be enforced. Now, a regulation that allows those bylaws to be enforced. Remember that municipalities exercise their legislative and administrative powers within the context of either national government or provincial government, setting the framework for them. So now we had to go via the route of the national government implement building regulations for energy efficiency buildings, so that then we can, on the basis of those regulations, be able to have bylaws that we can enforce at a local level supported by those regulations. As far as I know, the process of developing those regulations is underway. I think it's being led by the Department of Trade and Industry, as far as I understand. To have regulations about energy efficiency in buildings and many other things that will be incorporated into buildings. Once that has been done, then we'll be in a position to implement our bylaws in that regard. There was at some point an initiative by municipalities, which I think is something that probably is worth pursuing further, where we're saying of the balance sheet of municipalities or of the financials of the municipality, it should be possible. We were exploring that. I think Joe was in the forefront of exploring that. That it should be possible to get private sector to finance purchasing of solar water heaters and install them in households, and then just like we do with Philippines Catholic Weight. I don't know if members know that that's on a monthly basis they pay a fee for a fee to Philippines Catholic Weight, that we could use the same formula for the Lord Eaters. Install this at the cost of the municipality, financial of the municipality, and then on a monthly basis the user of the solar water heater pays a fee to the municipality, which then is used to pay back the financier who may finance the purchase of those. So that was an intervention that we thought it would assist in terms of leveraging private finance into financing solar water givers in households, and yet use the municipality's collection mechanism to get households to pay back to the municipality. I think it's something that was going back to and explore, because government money, I don't think it should be enough. And also households, some of them are not to spend 12,000 rand or 8,000 rand on a solar water giver that they have to change in 6 years or 7 years' time. I was asked to explain the removal and installation of meters in informal settlements. Essentially, what this is that as part of electrification of informal settlements, you find an informal structure there, and there is a need to provide energy. So you have to provide energy into an informal structure. But then the upgrading program then formalizes the structure, builds formalized structures. Then what it means then is that you have to then transfer that connection into the formalized structure. At the moment, you have only one bite at the cake in terms of once you are connected into a formal structure, even when there is a formalized structure, then there is money for you to transfer. So I think that's what is about the thing of removal and installation. Currently, there is a gap there in terms of as you formalize the structure, how do we deal with the temporal connections that were done to the informal structure. There was a question about the formalization of informal settlements by way of providing them with electricity. I understood the question to be, what is the reason? Are we going to forever have informal settlements? The understanding that I have from interacting with the Department of Human Settlements is that, firstly, there is a need for a shift in the way we deal with informal settlements. The problem statement was stated as such, that households go into an informal settlement and the informal settlement becomes a waiting area, because they know that being in this informal settlement, they just get to the meal, in which then they are considered for being provided a house elsewhere, off-site, once the house has been built. So informal settlement in that way become a permanent feature of your way to having a formal house, that are going to an informal settlement and then getting to the meal and going to a formal house elsewhere. And then somebody else goes into my informal shack, again, they follow that line. So the approach was, if you were to start, which is, I think, learned from international experience, if you were to just formalize the actual informal settlement, if you can, if conditions, if your technical conditions allow, then you don't create an informal settlement in a waiting station forever. People in their informal settlement will start to develop them and upgrade those informal settlements, formalize, and in that way, that was what I understood to be the shift in approach in respect of the formalization of the formal settlement as an item. I think I'll give it to that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to have a post that has got a good overview of that it leaves you with the ability to do. The one for me that was left was in terms of the coordination structure for the electrification. I think we have alluded in the presentation that there is a structure which has got a number of stakeholders that coordinates the electrification project, and that structure is called National Electrification Advisory Committee. You realize that there is a and it comprises of of the Department of Energy, or let me just say National Department, and also comprises of SALGA, and comprises of the AMEU, which is the municipal association of municipal electricity undertakings, not undertakers, and what it does, and it then looks at all these the policy issue for electrification, and then it also look at the monitoring of the electrification progress. But what Ntobele was alluding to when he looked at the strengthening of the structure at the regional level, the INEP offices, so that they can be the eyes of government. He then referred to the regional INEP structures for the Department of Energy, because then each one of the provinces have got those structures. So that is the issue around the coordination of the electricity of the electrification project. I also thought that there was a comment from Honorable Ross, which was talking about the 27 billion backlog in terms of maintenance for municipalities. I think it needs to be clarified for the members that the 27 billion is not only for the municipalities, it's for all the distributors in the country, including ESCOM. And why we are saying that is that all these not so good things get attributed to the municipality. I think the municipalities are also doing a great job in terms of the electrification and the maintenance of the network. There was an issue that was raised, and I'm sure that my colleague Umoha Ngesi will deal with the issue of the 80% occupancy rate requirement before the subsidy can be allocated for that particular project. I must say that between the licenses and the Department of Energy, we have gone a long way in trying to find each other in terms of all these preconditions that don't seem to facilitate the service delivered. And I believe that we are at the brink of reaching an agreement of scrapping the 80-20 principle. And I hope that when he responds, he's going to tell the members of parliament that it is now being scrapped. Yeah, I think I also the other issue that was raised about the informal settlements and the rural areas, and while Ntobele has dealt with it, but I think one needed to emphasize that the informal settlements as well, just like the other urban areas where the density is reasonably acceptable, most of those areas have been electrified. And now we are looking at the deep rural areas where the cost per connection is too high. And that is the reason that we are now engaging with the department to look at a differentiated strategy for the funding for these areas in terms of electrification, or significantly increase the allocation per connection in these rural areas. And again, I think the NEA in its engagement, almost on a yearly basis, engage on these issues. I think that's all then that was raised for SALGA, and unless we left something inadvertently and it can be raised, then we'll deal with it. Then, Chair.
Thank you, ESCOM.
Thanks, Chair.
listening carefully, it really provokes a lot of thinking, because you gain a lot of insight from the comments from the members and some of the suggestions that we'll probably take back and reflect on as an organization and help robust conversations to try and see if there are innovative ways of dealing with some of the challenges. We are of the opinion that we are still building the nation. The formula is not 100% perfect, but we are also of the opinion, if you look at our steps, that we are progressing, and I believe that if we coherently plan together and work together, we can make a lot of progress. I will ask my colleague here from INF department in ESCOM to respond on the rural development issues and the issues relating to schools as well as clinics. The amount of money that we spend on the BBBEs and BWO that you have seen, it's on the basis of 1.7 billion rands of that financial year. It's only a portion. So we have allocated 1.2 billion spent on the 1.7 billion that was allocated for the financial year, just to bring context. The other issue is the issue around backbone and strengthening of our networks. We have a robust capital program in ESCOM in terms of strengthening refurbishment of the networks, be they for electrification or new customers or any form of a requirement. And we allocate funding every year to deal with maintenance, to deal with strengthening, and to deal with the refurbishment of the network. There are still challenges in some areas, as we said, that particularly with the refurbishment, where you have to stretch your networks across lands owned by private ownership, where we are currently in major challenges with waivers. We cannot get permission to use those lands to plant our equipment so that we can reach some of the deep areas. And I just wanted to mention that as one of the biggest challenges. We call them waivers as well as servitudes. It's an environmental issue, it's an issue of land and development. There were issues raised around funding for refurbishment. As I said, we have built that in our MYPD in terms of refurbishment, and we are accelerating our programs, and not only in the urban areas. Our networks are across the board. We are now busy with some of the municipalities where we are working with them to build firm support for their systems, so that when you have one plant failing, the other can be available to take over. And obviously there are funding issues that are challenging them in terms of agreeing with some of the programs. But our view is that particularly in the rural areas where you have one line that is 100 kilometers long, and in that line we have so many villages connected to that network, we are actually investing a lot of money in those rural areas where we are cutting the lines into short, building new substations so that they can get the best quality for the rural areas as much as we are getting in the urban area. So there is a lot of work we are doing. If we were asked to come and present our capital program, we will definitely give the details and background and what's going on, so that the committee and the members should have a view of what we're doing behind the scenes. We welcome the view that we have to work coherently, and I think that is what we've been looking at. The funding model, certainly we need to come to conclusion as to how we're going to fund this backlog. As I say, we are busy building a nation, and it's going to cost the nation a lot of money to really come to the world-class standard, which, by the way, we have determined ourselves to become one. There was an issue raised around load sharing. Certainly and categorically, we are saying there's no load sharing happening. What we are seeing in some of the municipalities is pockets of network-related problems, some of them as a result of aging of the network, some of them as a result of illegal connections and bypassing of the meters. There's two aspects to this one of energy being stolen. As we use prepaid, we have what you call CDUs. These are machines that where people go and buy. Now, ESCOM, some years ago when we introduced these machines were broken into the vendors and stolen. And we are busy with the forensic and the police force to deal with this matter, where people are actually buying electricity at minimal prices, but they're getting more, and they're using more than what they're paying for. It's what we call ghost vendors. It's a challenge in the prepaid environment, particularly the urban environment. And there's another part, which is bypassing of meters.
where the meter is technologically bypassed, so the flow of electricity is unmanaged. The third one is where you have people that do not have infrastructure or connection, where they will pull a wire and put it in a system. So the issue of energy consumption is packaged around those three aspects. That it's not only illegal, you can go and remove all the wires, but still energy is being stolen one way or the other. And as you use more, obviously the system gets stressed, and we lack capacity to deal with it nationally. So we need some form of real engagement with the departments that enforces the law in the country, particularly to make energy theft a criminal act. That for now it's not. People are just getting away with it. And unfortunately, children are dying. And that for me is an issue that we even have to charge people with capable homicide. If we know that you were a part of this thing, we need to arrest you and charge you with capable homicide. That's how far we have gone. We have programs in Eskom to deal with such. Load shedding is not on our cards. We are managing our systems on a weekly basis. As a matter of fact, the Exco members of Eskom meet Monday, every Monday, to look at the status of the system, update in terms of how many customers in the rural areas, how many customers in the townships, how many customers in the suburbs, and so forth, that in agricultural sector that were affected by any form of system, from generation, transmission, distribution, stakeholder management, and also DSM programs. We are actually having a bad eye on it because this is our competency, so we concentrate mainly on electricity. So you can imagine that a whole lot of people working for Eskom, we try our best. But there is a lot of room to be improved, I think, if I look at the comments that were stated. Certainly, we will look at the how do we approach the deeper rural area to make it cheaper to connect them in our grid. The other issue is around the bridging of meters. I've touched on that. The RGP houses, these are the bridging is certainly mainly in the RGP houses, and I think it's a policy that government has to work on. Rural areas, we are certainly involved, and Isaac will give a view on that, as well as clinic and electricity. I just want to make this last comment, Chair, that when you look at our steps in terms of what we have done so far with electrification of clinics, as well as electrification of schools, we believe that we have made huge progress, but obviously there are gaps, and we need to really start looking at where are we and who are the agencies within government that should be supporting us, because we rely on a lot of information, and Isaac will explain that. In terms of engagement, I'm also, you know, in the NIC, we are part of the members. I think Sarah did not mention us. Eskom is part of that committee, in the advisory committee to the minister. And as we say that we were working with COFTA on some of the issues, obviously a lot of things, engagement has to take place in terms of the principle of adopt a Munich, where you have certain municipalities that we can partner, actively partner, and assist in terms of state the planning, technical support, financial planning, project management, and so forth. And we also have an advantage in terms of procurement, because we buy in bulk. If we buy transformers, we don't buy 10 transformers. We buy a lot of it all over the world. So we can leverage the buying capacity if we look at how best we align our systems to address the specific issues around there. And customer services, particularly in rural areas, as I said, we have a footprint nationally. Even in the deepest rural areas, we have contact with our customers. We know where they are. We have walk-in centers. We have what we call technical service centers in the rural areas. And all of them are treated the same. If there's a power failure in one household, if it's a major one, it should not exceed 3 hours. If it's really a problem, it must actually be managed accordingly. So our footprint is all over. We have our tentacles in terms of ensuring that the rural areas are getting the same treatment as the urban and urban customers, as well as we remember we have categories such as the agricultural sector, commercial sector, and so forth that we are supplying, and they are based in rural areas. So our systems are built to support all customers in those environments. The strengthening programs that we have embarked on is mainly to also cover the issue around universal access. And our submission, Chair, today is that if we can have a funding model that can assist all of us to go into rural areas. We are capacitated enough. We've built enough structure. We have people there. We have people in our offices in terms of engineering, planning. 10-year plans include rural development. So if we can have enough direction in terms of funding, we believe that the same energy that we had 1990 when we started with this program, we are of the opinion that we can actually move forward and exceed it if we are capacitated to do it from a funding point of view. Right?
Chair, I will be addressing issues relating to electrification. But before I do so, let me just make a comment on the coordination that was mentioned by Salga regarding the NEC. The NEC chair is there. It was preceded by the NECC, which was the National Electrification Coordinating Committee. And the NEC was formed then now to oversee the implementation of the electrification program. And as a coordinating body, it is not, because it doesn't have any ticket. It is an advisory body. It starts and it ends there. And the frustrating aspect being that we make recommendations in that August body, and they end in minutes and not being implemented. I will quote. For instance, the 80% occupancy, I have personally raised it after the Jamestown issue, and we're still talking about it today. The other issue, Chair, is the electrification of unproclaimed areas. That was minutes, but where as the NEAC took a decision, but it was not implemented because we were told, oh, yours is not right. So what I'm trying to say, if we take coordination seriously, we possibly then now might have to redefine the role of that body to ensure that then now it is meaningful in helping to carry the process forward. As far as electrification is concerned, it's not doom and gloom compared to when we started. If we jog our memories a bit, when we started electrification in 1994, when the new government came in place, the level of electrification in South Africa was 36%. That is rural and urban included. The latest figures, based on an adjustment done by STATS SA in 2009, they tell us that then now the country is 83% electrified. So to me, then now that is progress. Let us look at the electrification of rural areas. And then now the backlog. The rural areas in 1994, we had 12% electrified. And currently, we're sitting around 60%, 65%. We've got to get figures. The DOE should have those figures. But the point that I want to make is that given the backlog of 1994, we are sitting at around 75% in terms then now of addressing that backlog. In other fact, I can mention here with pride, say, in Eskom areas alone, in the current financial year, sorry, not current, as at the end of March 2011, we have electrified 4 million customers. To me, that is really a big step forward, because as the distribution division in Eskom, we've got 4,600 customers. And 4.6 million customers. And of that 4.6, 4 million is electrification. You will find that the sticking areas, in fact, if we were to put things into context, if you look at the Western Cape, in terms of the backlog there is addressed. All that we are doing at the moment is to address growth. You will find that the pattern as well in Gauteng. If you go down to the Free State, in Eskom areas of supply, we are only addressing growth except in areas that do not belong to Eskom. You will find, if you look at the figures relating to Free State, there's still a huge backlog, and that relates to Kwakwa, which is licensed to Putadichama. when a government asked us to take over the TPP state and self-government territory. That was the only part of the self-governing territory we could not, they didn't want to be taken over by ESCOM. So that's where then the battle sits. And then if you go to Northern Cape, we're almost there. It's well over 90%. Northwest, an honorable member from Northwest was complaining. Northwest is one of those forerunners here that's doing very well in terms of electrification, I think, to be exact. In Kalahari, in 2005, that was the first area in Northwest to reach universal access. So generally, we are not doing bad there. Mpumalanga, I say, you don't need a lot of public infrastructure to sort of reach universal access. All that you need is money in Mpumalanga, and then you could be there anytime. The big problem, I think, that it sits in Mpopo, it sits in KZN, it sits in the Eastern Cape. Then, let's unpack that. Let's start with KZN in particular. In 1994, when Cabinet resolved that then our ESCOM should take over the TPP state and self-governing territory, they approved the budget of $25 million, which was used for normalization of those areas at the time. And that amount of money then now was trusted or given to the Department of Public Enterprises, with whom we worked in ensuring that then those areas were normalized. The KZN, why the backlog there is still very high, is because at that time they refused to be part of that process. That was in 1994 until 1999 when they came to the party. And when they came to the party, then ESCOM at that point in time was rounding up its own program to commence the government program in 2001. And over and above that, in that part of the world then, one of the biggest challenges, Chair, was the bulk infrastructure. That is your substation. There's absolutely none. If you look as well in Mpopo, it's the same story. If you talk about the Eastern Cape, in the Eastern Cape is the topmost part, starting from Kumbo right through the Kumbo River. That's where then now there's no infrastructure. And the good news is, currently, in that part of the world, we are building a suite of substations. If my memory is anything to go by, it's about 11 of them, which are going to address the issue of electrification. We always say, when we talk electrification, the connection is only 15% of the process. The 85% is what people do not see. So generally, then, we are addressing that, and we are working there with the mayor. So we're not driving the process alone. We're working with the mayors in that area. The same can be said then now with respect then now to KwaZulu-Natal. We are busy there with a lot of infrastructure. I've been on the ground personally. I've spoken to a number of mayors who are quite aware of what we're doing in their areas. Strengthening our own network as well as ensuring that there are new substations that are put on the ground so that we should be able then now to connect more. As Chair, everybody else, I think Salga has mentioned this, the funding is always not enough for us to be able to realize our dreams. But if the funding could be made adequate, we should be able then now to accelerate, because the planning of an electrification project, especially where there is no power infrastructure, it takes quite some time. The lead time is usually around 27 months. So it needs time. Even if you give me money now, you won't see anything until about in 2 years' time. So generally, we are progressing in the right direction. In terms of schools, the school program, we have been working with that with the Department of Energy. In 2009, they wanted, that is the department, to reach universal access and respect of clinics. They gave us a list, because I think we need to put it on the table that in terms of the program, we are their implementing agency. They gave us a list of the projects that then we could electrify. And we have electrified all those clinics, because the cutoff was a radius of 3 kilometers from Crete. And anything beyond 3 kilometers then are going to be used, they are going to use then now alternative supplies to ensure that those are energized. The same applied in schools. They had a program by 2010 to electrify a number of schools. And we have finished that project now, beginning of this year. So the schools that we identified, which are up to about 3 kilometers from Crete, we have done that. And one of the problems, I think, even there, was funding, but they managed to get additional funding, and the work has been done. But if additional funding could be made available, I've always argued one thing in my life analysis. There is no poor area as far as electricity is concerned where you can say you can't get electricity there. The only thing is that it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. But generally, then what we are saying is that it's not doom and gloom. We are working on it. We have done thus far. And when you do your oversight, we would be willing to sort of be right ahead and show you. It's exciting when you go out in the rural area. For instance, I was at Umzumkulu. There's a big substation there called Umzali, right in the middle of nowhere. We were with the president last month in Imobo. That's a rural area, sir. And there's just out of the blue, you know, big substations that then now are being developed to be able then now to bring services closer. Thank you so much.
Chair, maybe before we cut, Andrew would like to comment on all the other methods of training, solar, thank you.
Chairman, thank you very much. In terms of the system status, firstly, I think the question was, are we heading for load shedding? And I think that Maleka mentioned that we're not heading for load shedding, but the one caveat I would like to put forward to the committee is that not far from here, two very large gas turbine power stations, which cost a tremendous amount of money to run, budgets every month. And I think while we see the light on it, it does come at a huge cost. So I think this is why we must push forward with an aggressive demand side management program for the country at the moment. And I think everyone would agree with that. Not just load shedding, not just avoiding load shedding, but at what price. So I think this has been an excellent discussion, and I think I agree with other comments to say that we've certainly from the customer side learned a lot. In terms of the analysis by and the follow-up responses by Selga to the questions raised, I think once again we wholeheartedly agree with those responses. There was a number of questions and comments relating to Eskom's role towards the 1 million solar water heaters, whether there are other players in the market, whether we're the only ones which are licensed and legislated, etc., comments of that nature. And I think from Eskom's side, what we'd like to do is to really direct these to the part of the public enterprise. We'll do what our shareholder tells us to do. Whether we're responsible for the 1 million solar water heaters, we've not officially been given that mandate, but if we were to be given that mandate, we would certainly pursue it actively, but that would be, once again, Department of Public Enterprises to decide that. There were comments and questions regarding the private sector and the role of the private sector, and I think there are two important issues here. The first is the private sector in terms of financing this program. It's not just the case of continuing the rebate. At some stage, there must be innovative funding mechanisms found, and I think the Wheelie Bin example is a brilliant example of exactly what can be done. It takes entrepreneurship and a bit of innovation to get this one done. The second, of course, is in production of solar water heaters, and then again, I would just emphasize again, as I did in my presentation, that to get a solar water heating manufacturing sector established in the country will take a long-term commitment and long-term orders for any supply. That is the consistent message we've got. And currently, Eskom is not equipped to do that. Our MIPD, you know, only getting money for a couple of years ahead. We can't give any certainty beyond that. And that's, I think, we'd not be able to give sufficient comfort to bankers and lenders and investors in manufacturing facilities. The question was raised as to, you know, why are things going so slowly? I think mathematically, what I can report is that the current rate of installation of solar water heaters is about 5,000 systems per week and rising. And at that rate, if we were just to continue that rate, we will reach 1 million solar water heaters by 2014. So the rate is there. We just have to keep the run rate the same. This is a cricket match without losing too many weeks. The issue of critical mass. The issue of critical mass, we have reached that point. It's just really saying, how do we prevent overheating by going mad and installing systems of poor quality, so we must make sure the quality is there. But if we just keep level heads, get the funding together, this is a program which is really set for good things and will be successful. There were specific questions relating to the Eskom rebate program, if I could just address those. Firstly, the question was as to the rationale for the reduction in the rebate. Basically, what we have to do is we have to set the rebate at a level, of course, which stimulates demand, but doesn't but isn't set too high, because if we set the rebate too high, it means that less homes get access to it. So we have to make sure that we set the rebate at a level which gives most homes access to the rebate. And that's why, whereas we doubled the rebate a year ago, we haven't halved it again. We've taken it down in smaller notches. But again, the idea is to spread out the rebate to as many homes as possible. And in particular, with the issue of the possible funding constraints, this is very important. So what we've done is we've reduced the rebate, but we see like a continued acceleration of the program, so we don't believe that it's reduced to a level which is constraining the industry. The question was put as to whether client lights could be included with the solar water heating program. I think there what we imagine, I think what is being spoken about is rolling up solar water heaters in conjunction with photovoltaic panels to produce electricity to power lights. And in that regard, Chair, we don't have, at this present moment, a mandate from NERSA to include a photovoltaic system as part of our solar water heating program. But with MIPD3 coming up, if that technology has matured to stage, I think that would make good sense. Lastly, Chair, I'd like to clarify the issue of insurance industry and what meant by saying that we're working together with the insurance industry. So perhaps a little bit more information on that one. Business Leadership South Africa took it upon themselves to convene a meeting last Monday with all the large insurance companies and the chief execs of those companies to talk about this issue. And that was a half-day workshop at which the insurance industry, the large players, committed themselves to basically make the rebate that is paid out on the first electric geyser payable for the installation of a solar water heater geyser. This would require one of two things, either a voluntary agreement by the insurance companies in the country or mandatory instruction by government. And I think both have got pros and cons, but it was agreed that this would be taken forward to the board of the insurance, the insurance company board, to which a proposal will be going for a voluntary commitment by the industry players. Basically, you could always fully fund the cost of a solar water heater if you put together the cost of the insurance power plus the Eskom rebate. So that's really what is being proposed, and I think it's very exciting if that will actually come about. Chair, I believe I've answered all the questions directly related to the solar water heating program as far as Eskom is concerned. Mm-hmm.
I say to you got to make a response.
I think correct. We'll tell Eskom which pay to play. That they don't be all of. They must focus on the task at hand. Mm-hmm. But equally, I think that we must say it openly here that yes, it's correct that the country still thinks we have got enough power. So we have enough PPAs with private sector which are signed, with capacity which have added to the current fleet which we have. However, that caveat of the cost of an open cycle gas turbine, which I think the regulators here must understand that it means that if we run those OCGTs, we are running them as a prudent operator, because we will have led the country into darkness, therefore the regulatory sector of load shedding would have happened. And therefore, that's an issue which I think that when we need to deal with these things, we must be able to understand. I think the only one thing which one needs to deal with is around the coordination, which was raised. And I see that there's a coordination at NEC level, which NIC level, which has raised a constraint, which the first time I'm hearing has come that he has got a problem with that aspect. And if those issues were raised, we would have taken them to a cluster which would have addressed it with the energy and other department concerns, so we can be able to. Therefore, there's that gap which we need to be able to do. However, I think that one thing which must give comfort to this committee, that education programs are monitored managed as part of the performance agreement of the Minister of Energy, Minister of Public Enterprise, and therefore with the President. Therefore, we are managing them within that cluster level. Therefore, it means that these challenges are not highlighted. We assume that things are fine while there are not there are issues. And I think that is an issue which we will have to take back to the principals and see to it that we deal with these barriers which are raised as such. Which I think that together with the Department of Energy will be able to do that. I want to conclude by saying that the period that Honorable Dexter has left, the message must be clear that we've said clearly that we are going towards radical change. Among that, when President Zuma gave us marching orders, he said that we must do things differently. Went out and said you must go and create an independent system operator so that you remove the biasness from ESCOM as a buyer, so you become a new broker which is independent from ESCOM. We've done that. The ESMO bill is out for comment. It's coming back to Parliament for you to agree or to say no, there's still need of a lot of work to be done. But that means that we've recognized the fact that it cannot be only ESCOM as the supply of last resort. It must be the role played by private sector, played by all those who might be able to play in the entire value chain of the businesses. And that's the point which we want to say that it can't be correct to assume that there's no willingness to move toward the low carbon trajectory, which even with the commitment of the President in international forum, where he said that if there are funding available, I will be able to make sure that there's commitment for my country to go toward the low carbon trajectory. And that's the same message we will take to all deals which we enter, even with the World Bank. And I think that's the issue which we're trying to say that it's not like it's a business as usual approach. And then I'm saying that the issue which was raised by my ESCO around NEC concern of the 80% coverage ratio. To me, when I read it here, I look at it, it's business as usual. So, see, we'll do it as it is. And we're told that you must turn around the tide, do things different, be innovative. And that's what we want to be taught, what innovative issues we must be able to implement, so that we deliver on the management side. And I think that we can say clearly that we'll be concluding a PPA with the private sector for 1,000 megawatts to supplement KZN and Eastern Cape in terms of additional power, which are needed. But also there's a repeat program which is going, which has got enormous, to be done. And we know that the concern to raise around the fact that why the repeat rates were reviewed by the regulator. But we believe that the regulator is independent. And that's why we don't want to enter in their space. They are independent regulators. They must regulate independently using economic models. And then from there, if there are interventions, we'll have to make interventions which are based on policy adjustment of our own country going forward. Thanks.
Now, que le busca, que le busca el carta con el tiempo.
In fact, as some of you may know, we also are part of the Climate Change Steering Committee in Parliament. And one of the things we were thinking of doing is, actually, by the time we reach COP17, we'd have done a couple of things, symbolic as they may be, but not just to show a case in Devon, but also ourselves, to start triggering that orientation. So that's how I take a point as being formal, and I can see they are not. It will be supported. In fact, if you don't mind it being amended, let's say the state as a whole, whether it's courts, whether it's departments, whether it's provincial government, whether it's municipalities, you know, ESCOM, at least TSL, when you hail in that side, at least you can really go to town in ensuring that you know, that gets done. In some areas, it can be quite meaningful in rural municipalities, because that would help a lot, you know. But in areas where there's a piece of electricity supply, it's symbolic. But it should be such that people can see, as he says, you know, lead by example, you know. And it's striking, in fact, what even Honorable Freyling said, that if his figures are correct, that this effort could move to a level of replacing you know, a power station. And I, one of you actually said that in one of the inputs in the past. I don't know if it was on solar energy or other. It's beginning to show that there are really definite ways of ensuring that we meaningfully move towards lessening, you know, our dependency on fossil fuels, fossil-based fuels, which is helpful. Chair and Honourable Member, just a few things. I'm glad Mrana Tom raised the issue of ISOs, IPPs, PPAs, the whole small realm of you know, the involvement of public sector. Whilst Honourable Dexter Putin is not around, had a point, but it was rather very, very harsh. But, the moment I heard that ESMO bill is around on the chair, I started asking for people to share a copy so that I can start following and write myself, because we're part of that crowd that's itching to have a look what role should be set. Ladies and gentlemen, I've heard very little about the role of Fortnite campaign in this. Not here, in terms of input. No, I know it is. But, as well as in the Strat Policy Action Plan, I thought this ESCOM, when they said local production, they would highlight that. That's a small comment, because it's very, very important that we make sure that when we say local production, we also allude to the fact that there's already a conducive environment for that to be done. But obviously, we'll take it up, you know, and ensure that it move to higher levels, and Honorable Garnett as well, in terms of international trade, you know, even when it comes to climate change, you know, one of the things we need to ensure that is transfer of technology. Complex as it may be, but those are the things we have to look into with the greatest of the. That's the radical shift that I see forthcoming. It's a matter of political will on all of us. But like, I hope Honorable Members have taken note of his message, either overtly or covertly. He's rather uneasy about the conduct of consultants. Wherever is appropriate to handle that, let's make sure that we are clear about that. I don't think he says let's get rid of them, but he really wants to ensure that they are sure they conduct themselves appropriately. The solar water heater projection. Can I formally request to you, Chair, as well, that we get details of the projection? And that's the only way you can monitor them. Not so. We can get one, a couple of seconds indication now, but please give us the 2-3 pages to exactly indicate, you know. It's not the first time that we've been told that because the systems are in place now, there's a radical shift, you know, growth is going to get exponential, wonderful, but let's give us tools to monitor that.
And it's encouraging that we've mentioned the insurance industry. I hope in future, Chair will actually look at even the finance and insurance industry as a whole. You know, we need to be clear about their role, not only in solar water heaters, but generally. We must regard this as a trigger point. You know. I remember talking to one comrade in one of the finance briefings, and I asked him that, given all these paradigm shifts in energy policy, what is in housing finance? What are you seeing? And he said, yeah, we've been thinking about kids, you know, but I think a little bit of a prod and a push from our side, you know, could be helpful on that. It makes access pretty, access to housing, access to better life, you know, rather meaningful and giving more hope. Chair, from my side, you do good. My one of my observations, a little bit broader, was that this was an initial stage of a long process. We'll sit down with the chair as well as the other chair. You know, at the back and probably a few others, to see how we take this initiative forward. It's very complex. It stands on two legs. One is about social transformation, better life for people who run areas that grow poor, some of us. The other one is the economic component, to ensure that our economy not just proceeds with peace, but to also enhance its growth. If you remember the former President Mbeki, time and again said that let us look at the cost of doing business. I'm sure amongst them is the energy component. Suppose then we can ensure that we make a meaningful contribution on that. But that being said, it's the collective approach that seems to be emerging from our side. It's my second term in Parliament, but we have hardly been you know, working very closely with other committees. It was sort of on and off, but I hope you're observing this is going to be a regular practice. It will come with its own teething problems, but it will also have its cumulative effect, you know, in ensuring that things move forward. Imagine if we would have just handled it, all of you guys, you know, as the Portfolio Committee of Energy. You then come and make the select committee here, but we then don't take advantage of the synergy that would come, you know, out of that. I'm not only saying that for just the thing supposed from our side, but I hope it also encourages you to further and further ensure that we really minimize, I'm not saying totally hatred of silo syndrome. It will all help you better and
to
that effect. Chair, I
preached
too much. I'm quiet now. I hand over to you.
Well, thank you, Chair. You know, I was just getting worried because some of the members, I don't want them to collapse as the sugar levels are getting low and they're listening to the past with big eyes and that. But Chair, let me just close off by saying thank you very much to all the role players, but I think we need a proper day or two to get other role players also. We need to get the IEC to find out how can they fund, how can they contribute to the shortfall. We need to get Treasury in. So be assured, it's not the last time we're here. We're here very shortly. We'll have to get Treasury in, we'll get IEC in, we'll get some of the DFI. We'll also get trade and industry in. My co-chair is there from Trade and International Relations. In terms of the IPEP, we'll also get economic development in terms of the new growth path. Because, ladies and gentlemen, you know, to go to the rural areas, as I've said from the start, we went to a municipality, and this municipality had 24 million in the kitty, and another 80 million was on its way. And this municipality was saying, no, but it's Eskom's fault. And they didn't know, the municipal manager and the mayor didn't know that Eskom was in the crowd, we've invited them. We didn't tell them, no, we've invited them. They didn't know we've invited the Department of Energy. And then when Eskom turned up and said, no, but this municipality is not talking the truth, we have been advising them, but they went on to external consultants. Then they saw, hey, we're in trouble. Then they said, please, select committee, help us. And that is our role in actual fact in terms of the constitution. And we have decided that we will take a concerted effort and approach to really live up to the vision of this parliament, to the State of the Nation address, to January the 8th statement, although Honourable Ross doesn't want to recognize it, but he is also living up to that, to the Freedom Charter, although Honourable Van Dingen says no, but he's also living up to that. So we will pursue that. We will definitely pursue that, Honourable Van Dingen. Thank you for your support of the Freedom Charter. We will definitely pursue that. So ladies and gentlemen, if there's any crisis, don't hesitate to call us. We are there to assist. In working together, we can move forward. Not silos. You know what happened to silos? We have now taken Kailang also into the silo of the DA. So we in the ANC won't work in that silo. But we believe in working together. Ladies and gentlemen, and good luck. Good afternoon, department. Travel safely back. All these entities, thank you very much. And we hope to see you very shortly. Thank you very much.